religion that we have to remember when we're talking about that makes it such a hot topic issue is because we're talking about law. Who gets to be God? Who gets to be God's deputies? Who is the Most High? Who is the divine authority? It's all about the claim to the Most High. The only way that somebody can be higher than us is if we give away our power. Because there's nobody. We're all equal. But we're not equal in our knowledge. So ultimately, I think it does have to be a hierarchy, but it has to be a cooperative hierarchy, like a bee colony. It's about what our value system is, what we care about.
Hello, Universal Hive Mind. Today is February 21st, 2024. I'm your host, Nate Kapp, and welcome to the 66 Cubbyhole Podcast, where critical topics are unveiled, discussed, and tested. The website for today's show is cubbyhole.com. That's CUBBYWHOLE.com. And if you prefer to listen to the show on a different platform, you can also listen with Spotify, iHeartRadio, Amazon, TuneIn Radio, Pandora, Simplecast, YouTube, Odyssey, Minds, BitChute, and much more. If this is your first time listening to the show, welcome. But I definitely recommend that you go back to show number one, start there, work your way forward in order so that way you have a bigger picture, a maximum value understanding of the overarching message that is stored within the Cubbyhole podcast. Okay. It's very, very important that you do so. There are going to be slides for today's show. Okay. And because this is a video, that doesn't mean that there's not going to be slides for the audio only. There is going to be an audio only. So definitely if you're just listening to the audio, you can go to cubbyhole.com, go to podcast 51 plus at the top and click on that. Go down to show number 66 and click on that and you'll see the slides for today's show. Okay. So obviously, if you're watching the show, you'll see the slides that we're going to be sharing. So that being said, hopefully everybody's doing well, all things considered. Today, we have a very special guest, Logan Hart. He's joining us from the Wizard Factory. And this man is a truth warrior. He's a voluntarist. He is a philosopher, an animist, a pagan. He studies shamanism. He's a teacher of natural law, the science of natural law. He also teaches rune divination, mind control, and so much more. And he's also a really great friend and, you know, just an absolute true brother on the front lines of this whole psychological, spiritual war that we all find ourselves in. So today we're going to cover some really great and really important information regarding the box and cube symbolism, something, you know, that really cannot be ignored because it really is at the heart of the occult. And it is such an important symbol to really study and, you know, give the chance to study. So we're gonna talk about Logan's presentation that he gave called Breaking the Box. And also we're going to get into some really amazing and important correspondences to that symbol. And then we're going to go into probably the second half of the show. We're going to get into animism, something I'm really looking forward to breaking down further on the Cubbyhole. And from there, we're just going to open up, you know, whatever we talk about and see where it all goes. Now, before I get into or we get into the show, I just want to catch us up to show number 65. Show number 65 was the last show where I talked about the X symbolism. And let me tell you, the X is for those of you who are, you know, listeners of Logan, I just want to, you know, make mention of, you know, because this show is going to be recorded. So those of you who are listening to his show, I just want to let you know again, for anybody, if you're listening to this, there is a, you know, all these shows are prerequisites to this show. Everything up till this show, number 66, is very important to listen to before you make it to this episode. So I got into the X symbol, very important symbol to understand, especially with what's going on now. And excuse me, what's been going on for a very long time. It's a very ancient symbol. And also I got into time management, something that if you really understand that this year is the year 2024, time management is something that we really need to focus on to really understand the power of energizing a symbol that's being used against us, okay, that's being wielded against us, and that is the X symbol, okay? And then I got into the 24-inch gauge. I talked about the, and this is all dealing with the esoteric Masonic Master Mason degree. And I talked about time and the Weeping Virgin, the Zodiac, and the triple X and the triple six, and how they go together, how they correspond. Very important information there. And also the spiritual currencies, you know, time and attention, you know, making time and paying attention to, you know, really develop the self instead of getting caught up in the material currencies. And then I got into the epigominal days, which is the 5 days out of time. And I got into cinematic language, something so important to understanding allegory, because it's a very high level language, cinematic languages, and it can really help us understand what people are trying to tell us from, you know, these movies, whether that be dark occultists or light occultists. Also, I got into subversive symbolism, the tomb, the womb, death, Osiris, Hiram Abiff, the tracing or trestle boards, and the ancient Egyptian mythos, you know, dealing with the stellar, solar, and lunar hero cults. And the this is all dealing with, you know, the internal journey, the hero's journey, okay, of the soul. And so much more information, gematria, eschatology, dealing with final things, resurrection, the ark. That was one of the things that I got into on the last show that is very important to understand. So much information. I just wanted to get us caught up so that way we can really understand why I chose Logan to come into this show with his presentation. And we're going to go further in breaking it down. But yeah, breaking the box or breaking beyond the box was the presentation that he gave at the Seed 5 Metamorphosis Conference last year, 2023. And it was really well done. I really appreciated it. And I'm just really looking forward to breaking this down a lot further and adding in some other important information that I think can really just add a lot more to that whole presentation. I'm just really excited to get into that. So that being said, welcome, Logan. I really appreciate you making the time to be on.
It's a pleasure to be here, Nate. Thank you for the nice introduction. And I think it's going to be a really powerful and hopefully enlightening conversation that others find valuable. I'm certainly going to enjoy it. It's great to be here.
Yeah, man. Logan, he really, I just want to let everybody know that he really helped me put this video together. I had some technical issues and we worked through it together, and I really appreciate him being patient because, you know, I'm getting this video thing started. I just want to see where it goes. And I'm really looking forward to it because I think it does add a lot of value to the work. And I'm, you know, just want to see where it all goes. So that being said, I just want to start off by, I want to know a little bit about, I mean, I want people that are listeners to know a little bit about Logan and where he has, you know, come from in his, you know, biggest awakening that really got him on this journey and what really has fueled him to go in the direction he has with the Wizard Factory. And if you haven't heard of the Wizard Factory, it is an awesome, awesome show that you can find at wizardfactory.com, correct?
Yep.
And
the Wizard Factory.
Or the Wizard Factory. And just an awesome, awesome podcast. And I really, really highly recommend it. So yeah, Logan, if you can just tell us a little bit about yourself and you know, what really drove you to get into this work.
Absolutely, man. Yeah, I've always been someone who, you know, likes to question things and try to look at the deeper aspects of things. But like everyone else, you know, I was born with my fair share of brainwashing, indoctrination, whatever you want to call that. So I had to sort of find my own way out of that to the capacity of the ways that I was raised to think and believe. And so it's been quite the journey. I'm sure I've got much more to go. Certainly, you know, never want to think that you've made it, right? Or that there's nothing left to learn, you know, or unlearn, I should say. But yeah, I mean, raised your typical conservative Christian, you know, Bible Belt, Texas, is where I was raised. So that was the first bit of it, was kind of the religion, and then waking up to kind of the conspiratorial side of the world, and then delving into the occult and what true spirituality is and what true freedom is. And so shedding the political, you know, ideas that we're all taught to believe. And that's been the majority of where I've really delved into and where sort of anarchism, freedom meets spirituality. You know, I think that's really important, that it's not just this exoteric, like, political stance. There's a very spiritual underlying aspect to it all. And I mean, ultimately, spirituality is it's the one thing that pertains to every human being. It should interest every human being, because we're all having a spiritual experience, whether we're even aware of that or not. That's what this is, because there is objective purpose and meaning to the universe. And again, spirituality is really just kind of all about discovering what that is, both from the universal objective layer as well as the subjective, right? Like, what is spirituality to me? What is my path? What is my soul desires and things that I'm supposed to fulfill in this life? So yeah, I just would call myself a truth seeker, and just someone who wants to be very connected to this experience, which is kind of what we'll get into later with the animism mindset.
You have definitely, you know, Logan and I have definitely talked quite a bit, and you know, I know he has had many awakenings just as I have, and there's just too many to really get into. But it's all about this breaking the box. And I'm really, really looking forward to just diving, you know, right into this. And just for, you know, people, I want to go ahead and get started on this sure. This presentation. So we're going to bring the slides in, and Logan is going to go through these slides, and I'm going to, you know, go ahead and kind of, you know, put my own spin on things and see what I can pull from the box as we go through. So this is going to be really, really awesome. Okay, so I'm going to go ahead and bring this in. right. So, Logan, if you can just kind of just tell people a little bit about what breaking beyond the box means in a very short way, and then we'll get into defining dogma, because I know dogma is really at the heart of this whole thing.
Yeah. So my presentation that these slides were taken from is called Breaking Beyond the Box from Dogma to Holistic Freedom. So that really kind of summarizes what this was meant to be all about. It is about the symbolism of the box, but what that symbolism is pointing to, and the way that I framed it in this presentation, is dogmatic thinking or religious thinking is, I mean, just as good of a term to describe what I'm talking about. When I say religion, I don't mean that just the cultural religions such as Christianity or Islam or anything like that. What I mean is a belief system that is imposing its truth on you and sort of expecting you or asking you to believe it at face value. In other words, here's the truth we're offering. You can choose to believe it or not, right? Which to me, the idea of a choice of to choose to believe to something, that doesn't even make any sense to me, because you either see it or you don't. Seeing is believing, right? You know, as they say, it's firsthand experience. So anything that's being offered to you and saying you can believe in this if you choose to, but there's no, you have to take it at face value and just say, well, this is what's being offered at truth, and I can either accept it or not without actually seeing it for myself. Or you're kind of just taking it on faith that this is in fact the truth. And then once you do that, then you'll even go as far as to reject evidence or experience or other opinions that conflict with this box that you've put your consciousness in. And so that's what really dogma is, or religious thinking. It's not just a religion, it's the thinking that goes, that comes with religion, that is kind of built into, and why I think that pretty much most religions are a form of mind control, because they really sort of have this built into them. And some people manage to find ways around it, and they're less dogmatic. And I can give, I can appreciate that, but, I think there's still way more holistic and connected and grounded ways of truth discovery without putting yourself in the weeds of taking anyone else's word for it or accepting some book or anything like that as the proxy for truth or truth discovery. So that's a pretty good way that I can sort of set the table with the overall concept here. Is it's really pointing out that religious thinking or dogmatic belief is probably the most dangerous and destructive, not only in the real world, like practically destructive, but destructive to human consciousness and spirituality than what we're talking about here, dogmatic thinking.
Right. Yeah. It opposes spirituality, truly.
Exactly. Yes. And obstructs it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so, you're going to get like a super just drop in the bucket, version of this, of the presentation today. My full version was about 2 hours long. So this is just going to be about 30 slides that we'll go through and just kind of lay out this in a very kind of like brief format of it. So starting with defining dogma, right? I generally start with defining things anytime that I'm trying to teach or convey an idea, because even, I'm using words to try to get my thoughts from my head into yours, and the words themselves need to be clearly defined, or else you're already starting off on bad footing, because when I say a word, you might have a totally different meaning associated with that.
Right. Yeah, that's what being principled is all about, you know, being able to define terms so that way we have an understanding, that way we can communicate, because it's all about grammar. You know, we have to have our grammar first, and then we can have, you know, a really good holistic conversation to grow together. So it cannot start on dogma. So yeah, if we want to, let's go to the next slide and define this.
So as I've defined dogma, dogma refers to a set of axioms, principles, or beliefs that are adhered and rigidly clung to by an individual or group without being questioned or doubted. And that last part is the key right there. It's okay to have axioms and principles or beliefs, and even be pretty like staunch in them. Like you and I, Nate, were pretty staunch in our beliefs of morality and natural law, but any truth, no matter how seemingly self-evident, should always just not be taken for granted. And it's like, it, to me, it's part of a thought process that's ongoing. It's not that you're like doubting yourself, like you're losing your confidence in your belief. It's simply that you've wired your mind in such a way where truth is the most important thing, and you're constantly reevaluating your beliefs, even the ones that you hold to be true, because only one of two things can be the outcome. Either you notice a flaw in it that you have to take back to the drawing board and maybe iron out some kinks to it, and maybe you find that there was an actual fatal issue with, and you have to kind of add some nuance, or maybe even let go of an idea altogether, or, you know, you work out those kinks, and then your belief is actually strengthened by that, because now you've deepened your own understanding of it. And so it's like, I'm trying to think of a good analogy. It's like you're constantly, it's like if you built a house and you're always checking for cracks and like maybe some shifting foundations that you need to go back and reinforce some beams so that it's stronger, you know, and maybe you find a part that's like really badly built or built on faulty ground. You might have to go in there with a sledgehammer and just take that whole piece out and rebuild it properly. That's what forging your own consciousness is all about. So it's not about like being wishy-washy in your beliefs, but simply acknowledging that truth discovery and the spiritual experience is an ongoing process. It never ends. And so you're always like searching and researching. That's like how I like to look at that term. Like when you research something, you know, you're looking again and you again and again, like you're constantly scouring for new ways to look at it, to deepen that understanding or find issues with it. So.
Right. Yeah. It's like the information is already there. It's already in nature. So we're just researching for that which already is. Right. Yeah. It's a very, very well said and very, very important. And, if you want to go ahead and read the rest of that.
Yeah. Go for it. A doctrine or tenet that is considered to be authoritative and indisputable within the context of that group or belief system. Those two words are very key there as well, whether realized or unrealized. So you may not even know that you have this way of thinking about something. Dogmas are often presented as absolute truths or fundamental principles that must be followed or adhered to without deviation. So within that, there's a couple words that I really want to lock in on. Within the context of a group or belief system, that's different than, you know, a personal discovery, for example, something that you, a pattern that you observe yourself. Think about the scientific process. You first have to form a hypothesis, right, of something that you think to be true based on what you've observed, but then you want to further experiment and test that to see if it is in fact true or can be disproven, kind of just the process that I was just talking about. This is different, though. This is in the context of a group, so a sort of collective idea that people are telling you, this is how we believe, this is what we hold to be true, and to like be a part of that group, you have to kind of just accept that, and to not accept that or to question that or even to, you know, go against that would be considered sacrilege, right? Blasphemy and heretical. So, or belief system, which again, it's the same kind of idea of it's something that's being offered to you. Dogmas are often presented as absolute truth. So again, this is not something you're seeing with your own eyes. It's something that's been offered to you as this is just how it is, and you don't question it because I'm telling you that it's the absolute truth. Whether it's because, you know, this book says that it's the absolute truth, and of course a book couldn't lie about its own validity. No way. You know, like as that would be absurd. I'm being very sarcastic there, but hopefully I'm illustrating the difference in what I'm saying is it's not about having a strongly held belief. It's not about having an axiom or principle. It's about something that's offered to you and that is expected to not be questioned. That's a real problem and danger, you know, to actually intellectual honesty and discovering truth for yourself.
Absolutely. It's groupthink is, again, you know, it's the destroyer of spirituality. And, you know, groupthink is what leads to religion. Groupthink is what leads to cults. Groupthink is just keeps someone from actually thinking for themselves and questioning, you know, what the whole group is actually believing in, you know, because they're all, everybody is fueling this group belief. And when they do that, you know, they become a powerhouse. You know, this is what creates this mob rule mentality. And, you know, this becomes people that just go along with what everybody else is thinking to be true or believing to be true. And this is what keeps people in this individually in a dark box and collectively in a dark box. And it is just the ultimate way to stifle someone's growth from actually growing into, you know, a true spiritual human. So.
Yeah. And that groupthink aspect is very important because that's why all of these religious cults, whatever form it may take, all have this practice of fellowship, or they call fellowship, because it's almost like they're not getting that direct experience of this truth. So the next best thing that they can do is surround themselves with other people that believe the same thing. So it's like reinforcing that belief of like, oh, well, other people believe this, so it must be true, or it's acceptable to believe this thing. And this is a phenomenon that really plays out in a lot of ways, especially with culture, you know, things that we've normalized, and it's like, oh, well, it's just accepted. So how bad could it be? Right. This is just how things are done. But that's, you know, really a bad way to operate, and does allow for a lot of really just outright archaic and destructive activities.
Absolutely. I really like what you said about, you know, the book. You know, just believing whatever you hear from a book. That's just like believing whatever you hear anywhere with any information. The whole, you know, a conversation can be looked at as a book because it's information.
And right.
If the information is not taken in and going through some kind of filtration process, AKA the trivium process of logic and, you know, reasoning, and really, you know, filtrating what makes sense and what doesn't make sense, then it's never going to be truly understood. And then, you know, when you go to talk with someone or write something, then it probably is just going to be a regurgitation of what you heard or what you read. And that can lead to, I mean, that really is a sign of ignorance, and it can lead to a lot of suffering as a result. And it does, as we can see in the whole world.
So, absolutely.
Let's move on to the next. Yeah, there you go. Next slide.
So in many cases, dogmas are associated with religious, philosophical, or ideological beliefs. They can be established by religious institutions, political ideologies, cultural and societal norms, and even scientific communities. So this particularly is pertaining to any sort of institution that is posturing itself to bestow upon the masses answers to the big questions in life, which is kind of what spirituality tends to come down to, right? Who are we? Why are we here? What is our purpose? And some people look to, you know, science to answer those things. They reject like the spiritual side, and they think, you know, science is just the, you know, they have the materials perspective. So science is going to give you all the answers that you need about us and our place in the universe. But it's still kind of just them finding their own religion in scientism. That's what it is. It's answering the same kind of questions. It's just they're going to a different place. But it's still very much coming from this sort of authority figure. So instead of a church and a Bible, it's guys in white lab coats and, you know, peer-reviewed studies and things like this.
Right.
So mind control targets and caters to different psychological profiles, personality types, and social demographics. This part is very, very important. These programs then activate and exploit our social instincts and psychological traumas and aggregate those with certain beliefs or predispositions to those beliefs into collectivist mental frameworks. So just like I was saying, like some people have a certain psychological profile and a disposition towards materialism and scientism. So they're going to look to that place, and then the cult of science through all of the different outlets of that type of information is going to kind of collectivize those people and find other ways to manipulate and exploit them as well. Some people flock more to religion. Some people flock more to politics. And this is why I have kind of coined the term the big three of mind control, because those three, religion, politics, and culture, are the biggest ways that people are manipulated in this way or put into boxes mentally on a mass scale.
It's just so, so important to understand how these social engineers are actually, you know, putting people in boxes with, you know, no problem at all. And culture, again, you know, it means to cultivate. And, you know, so they know how to put the information into your mind and cultivate that and grow that into, you know, what they want to see fit in this world or what they want your output to be.
Yeah. And those demographics, like I said, they've basically got a perfectly tailored program to run for every type of person and whatever their triggers are and their own unique traumas and upbringings and all of the different things that sort of wire somebody's brain up. And then they've got all these perfect little levers that they can manipulate that person based on whatever sort of dogmatic system that they've latched onto and trauma bonded with to kind of corroborate the projections that they have of that trauma onto themselves and onto their worldview. So that's really crucial when understanding, especially mind control.
Right. Yeah. Algorithm masters, you know.
Yeah. Yes.
Really understand the mind very well. And it's just, it's amazing how much, just when you really go down the road of mind control, it's just unreal how much someone can know about someone's mind just because they understand their own mind, and that that's all they do is study the mind, and therefore they have all the weapons of the mind to manipulate anybody they want to who doesn't have that knowledge.
Yep. So this next slide, continuing defining dogma here. Dogmatism refers to the tendency of individuals or groups to adhere rigidly to their beliefs, rejecting contradictory evidence or differing viewpoints. This can lead to closed-mindedness and an unwillingness to consider new information or to change one's beliefs when presented with compelling evidence. The result is a severe limitation of individual critical thinking and openness to alternative perspectives. So it's literally shutting down their ability for critical thinking and even just autonomous thought. It's just a program. They're wired towards beliefs that were given to them. They swallowed at face value, didn't bother to even try to understand the information. So there's a bastardization of the trivium process. They're just taking in the information. It's not knowledge because it's not true. It's just information that's as a proxy to the knowledge layer of the trivium. And then they're skipping right over the understanding level and going right into action, because that's what mind control is control the thoughts, you control the behaviors. And it's just like that, like a automaton, you know, a robot, a computer doesn't question its programming. It just does what the code says and acts on it. It input, output, without well that, said. Without understanding phase. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. And it's all emotional mind control. You know, that's people have no control over their emotions. Most people do not have control over their emotions. And it is very easy to put the ideas in someone and get them scared out of their mind and have emotional responses. And then they have you right where they want you. And that is most people, as we just saw in the past few years, very, very well demonstrated.
Yes. Yeah. For those listening and unfamiliar, I have another presentation called Trivium Hacking, Mind Control and How It Perpetuates the Slave System. And that's kind of my like magnum opus to date. And that goes into much greater detail on kind of what this one touches on, but it's like this box presentation took one kind of like sliver of the Trivium Hacking and like unpacked it a lot further. So this is, even this whole presentation is a microcosm. So it's like this show is a fractal of a fractal of the full picture that I really laid out. So if you really want that like master blueprint sort of bird's eye view to mind control, definitely do check out that presentation.
Yeah, I second that. Is that whole presentation was so well done, and I definitely recommend to check that out. And yeah, Logan has been doing a really great job at explaining mind control, as he is here on this show. Let's go ahead and go to the next slide.
Yeah. Okay.
Symbolism of the box.
Yeah. So now we're going to get into what, you know, the symbolism of the box. So the imagery itself, but also what does it mean? What is it pointing to, both from a sort of just a philosophical concept, as well as it's often used in mind control itself to be associated with certain of these concepts as well. So any variation of the box, you've got a square, which is a two-dimensional form. The cube is the three-dimensional, or the box, or a block, or a brick. You get the idea. These are all just kind of different names for the same shape, geometric shape. And what does this represent, like from an esoteric perspective? Suppression, closed-mindedness, stagnation, materialism, conformity, confinement, separation, repression, rigidity, slavery, death, borders, boundaries, and order, which, you know, even these things aren't necessarily bad in any way inherently. Nothing is really inherently bad in nature. Nature is completely neutral. When you're dealing with nature, it's all about balance, right? So if you, like, say you have a growth of weeds in your garden, well, you might want to suppress that, right? Suppression is not a negative force. It's only when it's applied to your consciousness does it become a weapon of mind control, right? To cause you to conform to a belief system, right? These sort of things. None of these things on this list is inherently a bad thing. So keep that in mind with the general symbolism of the box in itself. The box is not evil. That's a very Abrahamic sort of black and white way of thinking. Ironically, it's a very box-minded way of looking at it. So what better way to depict this concept than with the concept itself?
Yeah, I really, really like this slide. And I like the representations that you applied here. And I do like the fact that you said, yeah, don't take these as, you know, necessarily evil or good. It just is. And right. I mean, slavery definitely is not a good thing. But it is inevitable that this happens when people stay ignorant. And, you know, ignorance builds the slavery. And where does ignorance come from? It comes from staying in the box, right? So that's where it leads to. And I just wanted to also add that anybody who has been following along with my work in the last few shows, one of the things I get into is, you know, the tomb or the womb. And we're going to get into some of that stuff as we go. But thinking of the box as a womb in the universe is one of the most beautiful things that anybody could ever truly understand. Because when you understand that the cube is a place, a starting place, okay, it's a place where we, you know, this is it's like thinking, back to square one, right?
Stepping stones.
Stepping stones, right? Where do you begin from, right? And that the reason, one of the most beautiful things about the cube is that it, or the box, is it, as a symbol, it unfolds. It begins to unfold. This is what the idea behind the unfolding of the occult means symbolically. So to begin, you know, begin your journey, you start out in a box. You start out in your womb, you know, in your mother, right? And, you know, this is when you think of alchemy, especially alchemy tied with esoteric Freemasonry, something I talked also about, which is the broached thernal symbol. This is a cube with a pyramid on top. Essentially, you start out in a, you know, cube, and you're working, you're trying to understand this whole cube. You're trying to make sense of what this thing is, this thing called life, this womb, this darkness. It is all about going into the darkness and really starting to learn, you know, doing your shadow work. That is part of this black cube. And, you know, I might be getting ahead of myself because, you know, I know there's a lot of stuff later that you're going to talk about. But I just want to make mention of that because I, you know, there's other things to add on to the representations because, you know, the cube, it goes on and on and on. It is a constant unfoldment. And one of the other things, you know, you think about Saturn. Saturn is considered the planet farthest out from, you know, the sun and the solar system, right? Because it's the planet that we can see with the naked eye. It's the furthest planet out. And it's always been associated with Kronos, something else I got into. But to as a starting point, right? As a starting point, we start there, you know, when you understand the Vedic chakra systems, the seven chakras, the energy centers that are aligned to these planets. Well, the root is aligned with Saturn, and the root is, you know, consciously where you start in life. And, you know, and it's dealing with the sex organs, you know, where you were originally, you know, generated or, you know, manifested into this reality. And therefore, it's where we begin. It is the womb. And so as we grow out of that box, we start to understand what it is. We understand the dark side of it, and we understand the light side of it. And it's a very beautiful representation of the beginnings of our life. And, you know, that's what hewing or sharpening your ashlar, you know, to build your ashlar in esoteric Freemasonry is about, you know, going from, you know, a rock that is, you know, out of shape, or a stone that is out of shape. And then now you're trying to shape it into a cube, because that's what you're trying to do, is sharpen yourself and to understand where you really come from. So yeah, anyway, I wanted to share that because I love that slide and I love the representations that you gave.
Yeah, I love what you said there, man. You had my brain kind of, my wheels spinning a bit as well, because the becoming, the beginning, you know, the initiation, it's like even time is not inherently negative. It's, because without time, there is no process. We're in the process of spiritual becoming, and you have to do things in order, right? There's that word, order. Or should I even say chronological order, doing things in chronological order. First things first, you have to learn your ABCs and go through the elementary, you know, school, basically. Like that kind of wordplay is so beautiful, because it's always been there and it's showing you the way. You just have to have the eyes to see and to be paying attention to those things, to those concepts. So
and
yeah,
be open to it. Yeah, very well said, man. The perils of boxes.
Yeah, so this is just kind of reiterating this, the box in context of consciousness, putting your mind, your beliefs, your ability to perceive and question and think in a box of dogmatic belief. It brings about a conformity, which is stifling your own individual essence, right? That's what's unique about you. That's what's so the most powerful and beautiful thing about you is being you. And so when you conform to something like that, like I said, the group aspect is a very big component of this. You're crushing that and you're stifling that and you're putting that in a box. It gives you a false sense of security, because again, it's like you're surrounded by these people that believe what you believe. And so you're like, oh, it's safe to believe this because other people do. So it's like, it's a sort of a logical fallacy that just because you know, other people believe it, it's like the consensus fallacy, basically. Just be, you know, like the whole world could be believing something and it'd be false, but somehow that has an effect on the mind of like, well, could, you know, 10 billion people be wrong? Yes, they can, you know, like that's very important to recognize.
Stay safe and stay dumb.
Right, which is that's why the irony is it's false security, because it makes them feel safe, yet it's a very dangerous state to be in, because your true intelligence is not online and you're totally open and vulnerable to all sorts of mind control and manipulation and all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, no matter what kind of security, that box can be destroyed, you know?
Yeah. The next one is monolithic, which, you know, it's a centralization. And if we've learned anything through history, is that centralization is generally not a good thing, at least especially a forced centralization. Some things do need to be centralized, but based on merit and leadership and voluntary interaction, not a forced, imposed kind of this conformity and centralization of beliefs, right? Because then that's what it is. It's like you're centralizing your whole belief system on the basis of a text, for example, a Bible, rather than reality itself. So that's kind of what that is getting at there. And then it as an extension of that is a false proxy for truth, because it's getting you to take your eyes off of the thing that we're in. Like, we're literally in this experience. We're completely engulfed and absorbed by it. And yet religion says, hey, no, don't pay attention. That's worldly things, right? Christianity, I was raised that way. I'm sure others do too, but they specifically demonize worldly things. Like, oh, don't pay attention to the ways of the world. It's all about this. This is the truth. This is the word of God. And so it's acting as a false proxy for your own divine experience of this realm.
Absolutely. I completely agree. Very well said.
All right, moving on. Good. So further breaking down the box. The box represents the program, imaginary borders of thought constructed to contain and suppress your consciousness. So it's imaginary borders. Keep that in mind. They don't actually exist. It's something that's self-imposed through this idea of conformity and just like, you know, we don't question things. This is just how it is. And then putting all of this stipulation around what it means to question or speak, you know, God forbid, negatively, and you'd be labeled a heretic, and you know, you're blaspheming, you're taking God's name in vain, things like that. You know, those are like really frowned upon.
Yeah, it's, you know, the program is the Matrix, right?
Yeah,
and you know, that's, people don't understand that. Everything that the government is, everything that these, you know, institutionalized religions are, they are in an inversion of nature, but they have truth within their religions. Yes. Within their teachings. Right. And that is part of the program, but the program is sold to you in a way that locks you in it through all you need is your belief. Right. And so it's an installment. The program is a matrix installment. And so that is the inversion of the actual matrix. You know, the matrix is the, you know, the womb of all creation. The actual sacred feminine mother, the great mother of all, is the matrix, right? The womb of creation.
The cosmic egg.
Yeah, it's the whole thing. And see, that's what they want. They want to take the whole universe, and this is what they've done. They've taken the whole universe, the whole womb, and they've made their own version of it and just installed it into people's minds as a form of indoctrination for thousands, hundreds of thousands of years. And so this whole Matrix program has just been worked on and worked on and worked on. And right now we're part of this giant Abrahamic installment, you know, into most people's minds. And so breaking the program is breaking the Abrahamic religion, AKA the solar cult. Mm-hmm. Now, this is something we talk about on this show. And, you know, this box is the program. It's like they just open your open your box and then put their box in, and then you have to break free of their box and then break free out of the other box, the natural box. It's not really breaking out of that one, but it's about, you know, learning
into it.
Yeah, you could say that, breaking into your own box of nature. And because they've locked that away from us, you know, through these indoctrination programs.
It's very much like Morpheus describes the Matrix to Neo. It's a false reality that is grafted onto you, to where when you're looking around, you're not seeing things for what they really are. You're seeing it through the lens of the program. So it's like you think you're really seeing, but you're not. You're just projecting that program everywhere you look, and having that limitation built into it.
Right. Absolutely.
So it is static and stagnant belief. So not dynamic belief, which is what really belief should be, is things that are held to be true based on your experience, which you're always adding to. Every single day you have new experiences. And like I was saying before, those experiences will either corroborate your beliefs or challenge them. And then you have to sit there and think, well, hold on, what, you know, how does this experience reconcile with what I hold to be true? That's a dynamic belief system that we should all have, that's always evolving and shifting and refining into a more true and accurate model of reality. You cannot have that when you are stuck in a box of belief, because the beliefs are what they are. They don't change. And even when reality and experience negates that, challenges that, you reject the experience of your own ideas instead of challenging them to make way to keep your beliefs intact. That's why it's so dangerous and destructive and verbatim like anti-spiritual.
Yeah, absolutely. Very well said.
So often these are rife with false dialectics and polarized ideas and dogmatic beliefs. So like the black and white thinking, like I was saying before, everything's either just good or evil, you know, light and dark. There's, you know, it's like all or nothing. You know, it's these kind of like absolutist, extreme ways of looking at everything. That's a very telltale sign of a sort of a dogmatic belief around a certain thing.
Right. Yeah. It doesn't allow for that refinement and that sharpening. It's just, you know, you're sharpening one side of your brain in some way, maybe not even really sharpening that. But it's just like, that's why it's important to not just work on one side of the brain, to become conscious that there are two sides, because consciousness has to, you know, to become conscious, it is about both sides truly working together, and, you know, the aspects that are associated with both hemispheres, being the sacred feminine and the sacred masculine hemispheres. And, you know, obviously we see this all over the place in the political you know, polarization. It's just, you know, people don't understand that the reason that they're taking one side or the other is because their brain is out of balance. It's polarized. It's going in one side and sharpening that side and then completely neglecting the other side.
Yeah, it's really ironic that people know it's polarized. That's the word we get to polarization. And it's literally going against the natural law of polarity, that all truths are but half truths to be reconciled. So you can't have that. There's no room for nuance. The truth lies in the nuance. And that's where you said, like, the refinement of the idea comes in that nuance and synthesizing ideas. So if you're all or nothing thinking, you're totally negating that, and your consciousness is totally out of whack. You're not seeing the whole picture.
Right.
And therefore your behavior will be out of whack as well.
Right.
The cube or square, as I said before, this is just reiterating, is not an inherently evil or negative symbol. It represents the divine masculine. It must be balanced with the feminine or it will become a cage, just as the feminine can be a form of imbalance and become its own form of limitation and dysfunction. But this is specifically focusing on the cube aspect here.
Right.
So more aspects of what it represents is a symbol of suppression, imprisonment of the soul, stagnation and lack of progress. Because again, a law of rhythm, everything is moving, law of vibration, everything is moving, everything is constantly in flux. And so if you have something that's rigid and static, you're fighting nature. You're in that, and stagnation leads to disease. Just think about the body, right? If your sedentary lifestyle, or you have something like stuck, like your blood flow is cut off or something, like everything needs to stay moving. And as soon as it gets cut off, it starts to just wither and die and get, fester.
Right. No growth.
That's right. That's right. Because, you're cutting off from the flow of life force energy.
Yeah, absolutely.
The life force energy is always moving. So anything that's static, that's because there's some sort of severance of that flow. And as soon as it gets cut off, it's just going to start withering and dying away.
It's not animated anymore.
Right. Sacrifice of individuality, isolation and separation. Because as I said, it's the kind of the masculine and feminine aspects. Feminine is all about connection, community, oneness, wholeness, unity. And so the masculine aspect, it to an extreme degree, is that cutting off from the whole. It's, hyper-individuality, but not, I don't know. It's kind of two sides of the same. You're sacrificing your individuality as far as your authentic soul expression, but you're also kind of cutting yourself off from the connection when it comes to reality and nature and truth and all this. Like, you're isolating yourself off from that, if that makes right. sense. And the repression of intuition, because again, the intuition is a feminine quality. And so if you're stuck in the box, you're in the left brain, you're just all like linear, like just the code, like I said earlier, doing its thing. There's none of that, the feminine aspect of intelligence being incorporated into the overall conscious process.
Very well said, man. I'm loving just listening to you break these down, further. Because I know you did in your presentation, but I can tell, there's a lot more to it.
Yeah. So here we have some sort of phrases that you'll know and probably have said countless times throughout your life. But these are all kind of aspects that are reiterating the usage of the cube or the box or the block or any of these ideas that are kind of illustrating this, all of the attributes that I've described about it. So, when someone says to think outside the box, that means kind of break the programming, break that linear, oh, well, this is just what we've always done. Thinking outside the box means kind of trying something different, right? A fresh idea. Well, you're not having fresh ideas if you're stuck in dogma. You're thinking what you're told to think.
Yeah. Go beyond the program and, break the rules just so you can understand, if the rules are correct in nature, or they're just some kind of, program that you're operating under.
Right. Right. You might think they're rules, but they're just assumptions that are kind of keeping you stuck. And, right. and by thinking outside the box, you're recognizing that they were just self-imposed limitations. That's a really good way of looking at it, because it's really illustrating it's all self-imposed. We do it to ourselves by stifling our own consciousness in this way. Don't be a square. Now, kids these days don't really say this anymore. This is kind of an older term, but it, you know, it used to mean basically, don't be lame, right? If you're a square, you're lame. You follow all the rules. You're no fun. You don't like to, you know, kind of let loose and party and this kind of thing, right?
Yeah.
You know, be there or be square, you know.
Yeah, very, very left-brained people are typically the squares. You know, don't be, you know, completely void of emotion, you know, someone who's just very like robotic.
It was kind of like a dork back in the day.
Yeah. Yeah. Yet it's funny because square also implies that someone is smart, right? It doesn't mean they're intelligent, but it does imply that they're smart.
Right. So
that's interesting.
Or they're sharp.
Sharp. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So blockhead, you know, you're a if you call somebody a blockhead, that's pretty self-explanatory. And it's literally equating their consciousness, their mind to a block, and they're kind of an idiot. Mental blockage or writer's block, same kind of thing, right? You're blocked, you know, you've got a blockage, you're prevented, you're stifled off, especially in the context of writer's block, because you're not able to access that right brain creativity. You're cut off from it. Very interesting.
Yeah, I get artist block and writer's block. But the thing is, like, you know, learning when you get a block, how do you, you know, you have to know how to work through that, right? You know, how you have to find a way to get out of that by, you know, forcing yourself to break open those corners and really, you know, use your imagination and just and get yourself in some kind of rhythm. That's what a lot of people don't know how to do. And that kind of is the same principle as when you're, you know, getting any type of block. That could be the block of what the government has, you know, programmed into your mind. And you don't know how to get past that. It's because you're not using your imagination. You're not using any of your real strength of your brain to go beyond that, to really, you know, see how to get past these blocks. So,
yeah, love that. So then you have, like, if there's square, then it's, you could say, you know, two people are competing and they're squared up, then they're very even or tied, right, in match, or like you want it fair and square, you know, you're on the square, it's even, it's fair,
right? That's correct.
Yeah.
And Masonically that means correct,
right, ordered.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
by the rules, the ruler is the square.
Right, that's right.
Cornered and boxed in are two other kind of, again, you're trapped, you're boxed in, you're stuck in the corner, like, and that's where you're kind of in fight or flight in the left brain.
Right.
Stumbling block, you know, is another, like, you getting tripped up, you're not in flow, you stumbled.
I get that a lot.
Yeah,
that's what makes me learn, though, you know. I stumble and after, you know, getting hit with a block, and I get back up and I keep pushing through, you know. That's what you got to do, is get over the stumbling blocks, you know, to really get a good inertia going in whatever you do.
Yeah. And I really like this next one, to get around the block. If someone's been around the block, it means they've lived a little, they've experienced things. And so it's not just like you think, well, they've been around the block, like a city block, right? They've been around and on the streets and had experiences, but it's in the word. They've rounded the block. They've circled the square.
Right. Yes.
Rounded the block, you know.
Absolutely. Yeah, I like that one.
And then back to square one. It means you're starting all over again, back to square one.
Yeah, that's what I was saying earlier. Yeah, it's like if something is back to square one, that indicates that square one is where something started, right?
Yeah.
So that would be the two-dimensional version of the three-dimensional cube where you start, right? You start on the square, right? And to start on the square, you know, that's where you grow from, but it's also Masonically to act correctly on, right?
Right. So
to start is you know, that's a big one, you know, start at square one.
So here we have the cube and the sphere. So again, these are primordial shapes. They're very fundamental, the building blocks of reality. You know, when you think of, like, there's three primary colors, right? Well, there's three primary shapes geometrically as well. You have the square, the circle, and the triangle. Well, you have the square and the circle, or the cube and the sphere. This is the masculine and feminine that you start with. And when these two are integrated, you go from duality to triality. And that's where the triangle comes from. That's the Trinity, is that the essence of the two is not lost. The two don't become one. They become three,
right?
Because they're still what they are, but now they're extending and creating a new entity, the offspring of the child, the you know, the child of the masculine and the feminine, the mother and the father. And this constitutes the Trinity.
Interesting. Yeah, man, that's cool.
I'm sure Nate will have plenty to say on this this slide here. So you have the you know, the square and compass. This is depicting the same thing. This is the masculine and feminine principles, because the ruler here, it creates a right angle, which is half of a square. So this is how you would draw, if you were tracing with these two instruments, the ruler would create the square, because you have the right angles. Again, right, correct, right? You're on the square, you know, fair and square. And then the compass is what you would use to draw the circle. So there's those two shapes. And as you see, they're coming together. And when they come together, what is generated in between them? The generative principle, creation, magic, essentially.
Care. Right. Yeah. To generate care. Yeah. It's a, you know, it's interesting too, because G is akin to the number seven. G is the seventh letter in the alphabet, but it's also the combination of the C and the seven together. But when we understand that the G represents seven, think about the cube. Okay. So the cube, think about the, you know, the absolute cube being symmetric. Okay. It has seven points as a two-dimensional symbol, right? So that is very significant when you try to understand what the cube is in correspondence to seeing that G in the middle of the square and compass. And also, let me bring that back up. So the compasses that we see, that the tool that makes or instrument that makes the circle, this is the spirit, right? So the square is the material, right? And then the circle is also associated with spirit, and that's the sacred feminine. But we have to understand it's also associated with the triangle. Okay. And so when you see this symbol, just understand that the square represents four and the compass represents the three, being the triangle. So it's always triangle on top of the square. And when you see that in your mind, that is a house. That is a, mm-hmm. that is a temple, right? So it has the seven points. So again, it's an unfoldment. The cube is an unfoldment. It is, it's also part of understanding the gavel, which is three sticks crossed. So where the three sticks cross, the middle point is the seventh point. And then you have the six points pointing outward. And that, when you connect all those points, it creates the cube. So it's very, I mean, I could go on and on and on about this symbol and the other symbol, or the tracing board. And, you know, there again, in what I was talking about earlier with the ashlars. So you have the rough ashlar, which is on the left in the back, which is, you know, the stone that has not been hewed yet. It hasn't been cut yet, or chipped away. And then you see the perfected ashlar, which is on the right. And that all that represents is going from your lower self of ignorance into your higher self of perfection. You know, because we're always, it's not that we'll ever be perfect, but why not strive for perfection? Because that is part of the evolution of the human species, is striving for perfection. And we do that by sharpening ourselves with, you know, the science of natural law and morality, and living that way. And that's what this, you know, esoteric Freemasonry, when it's really truly understood the way that it was meant to be as a science of the soul, that is what it that's what it helps us understand about ourselves through the archetypes, through the symbols, such as the tracing board and such as the square and compass.
Good stuff, man. All
right. And if anybody, you know, wants to, you know, learn more about Freemasonry, that is what I've been talking about, or what's been talked about on the Cubbyhole for the past at least 25 shows. So anybody that goes there, you know, if you want to learn there, obviously you can go learn anywhere you want. But the way that I laid it out, I go through the symbols and the archetypes and the degrees and the tracing boards, and really break it all down so people can really understand it. And it's a very beautiful science that really helps us understand ourselves and, you know, the ancient world and, you know, origins, and really just helps us understand the whole structure of this box of slavery that we're all part of. So, oh yeah, this slide.
So yeah, I mean, I guess this needs no explanation or no introduction anyways. This is, you know, by the great Nate Cap himself. And this is depicting, you know, the checkered floor, which is, again, the square. This is representing of base consciousness, essentially the unrefined, the beast of man, right? The base is the beast. That's, you know, kind of the same phonetically. Nate, I'm sure you've got plenty you can add to that.
Oh, no. Well, you definitely nailed it. And it's all about understanding that rough ashlar is, it's about, this is what happens when we just allow ourselves to stay in materialism. Okay. Cause we start out in materialism to some degree, because that's what the box is about.
Right.
You know, when you understand that you're starting out in materialism, there is a seed that is waiting to be sprouted. And that seed is what ignites that eye that you see on the floor. But when that eye is not ignited, it stays on the floor. It stays calcified, just like what fluoride does to the pineal gland. And it stays in the checkers. The eye stays in, you know, black and white thinking. It stays in shambles because there's no structure, there's no knowledge, there's no higher order thinking at all. The brain is being run and dominated by the R complex. This really symbolizes, in my opinion, where most of humanity truly is in this world, because people have not even taken the chance to step into their own temple, because this is Solomon's temple. Symbolically, it's Solomon's temple. And when Solomon's temple is in shambles, okay, this is the result. The result is what we see in the world. And, you know, so, you know, the way that I use symbols or I express symbols is I'm using them to learn myself and learn, you know, the world and how things actually work. And so this is an archetype. This fluoride piece is an archetype. It is to, you know, really put in perspective of what is, you know, obviously the other one that you just saw, the other tracing board, that is to help you understand yourself. But this is a representation of the last tracing board in a way that this is like hell. This is the hellish version of Solomon's temple. And this is, you know, this is a tracing board, but it's tracing out the actual collective consciousness from my perspective.
Very well said. And yeah, I mean, that's the beauty of symbols, is they are in their natural form a tool of shaping and evolving consciousness. It's funny because people think, you know, symbolism is all about mind control and, you know, occult programming and in movies and this and that. And like, it is being used in those ways, but all the dark occult ever is a inversion and in a weaponization of nature. You know, it's in it, you know, turning it on its head. So yeah, it's important for us as students of truth and natural law to utilize symbolism. It is the language of the universe, and it's indispensable in the spiritual process.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, we have to, you know, see the key on the floor. We have to be able to pick, you know, don't allow that to go on the floor to begin with, but we have to pick that up, and we have to unlock our heart. And you know, for us to actually ignite that eye, you know, to find that key represents care. And if care is on the floor, there's really not much more that we can really do. But I'm not trying to sound like, you know, it's all hopeless. But what I am saying is that, you know, we have to find that aspect of ourselves to really pick ourselves back up off the floor, okay, and allow ourselves to be pulled up by the spirit, and but not too high, you know. Just try to find balance between, you know, let the material hand hold the spiritual hand in balance, in unity. But you know, sometimes you gotta you know, rise up quick to really get things done and get things in motion. So, you know, there's a lot to this tracing board, but I think that really states it best.
Yeah. I mean, we could spend hours just on that. There's definitely more I could say, but I think we can just move along here.
Yeah.
So perfect segue into what I was just saying, where, you know, how these things are weaponized. Again, the square isn't negative. It's, you know, material, which is where we live. We are flesh and blood beings. There's nothing lower or bad about the material world. It's just part of the whole. It's when you get stuck in that and are negating, especially the spiritual aspect of things, that's where it becomes problematic. So what better depiction of spitting in the face of nature and truth than order following, you know, thugs that are the ones that are actively manifesting slavery in the world? And as you see, they've they've got their cars adorned with this, but even, you know, they're putting it right on their own heads, right on where their consciousness is emanating from or not emanating from. It's symbolic, and it's a cult mockery of what these people volunteer themselves to be, cogs in the machine.
Yes.
There's a blockhead for you.
That's a blockhead. Exactly. Right. And it also represents that they are in the coffin, you know, below the floor in the coffin, because anybody who, you know, really studies the esoteric Freemasonry of the tracing board, like we just saw, below the floor is the coffin. And that coffin, if it just goes left closed, that spirit never raises. And anybody who stays in the box, in the coffin, is residing in materialism. And you know, these people that, you know, like what we were just looking on the screen, these people are, they don't have it. It's almost like they don't have the capacity to raise up out of this condition. They're so engulfed in it. They're so numb. They're just, these people have the lowest IQ of anybody. And they also don't have a true heart, because anybody in their right mind or in their right heart would never join something like this. But they are absolutely being mocked with this type of symbolism, because, you know, think about this. Like think of a house with a basement. Okay, where is the basement? It's in the lowest part of the house, right? So think of the word basement, right? The lowest form of the mind. Ment means mind.
Base mental.
Right. Base mental, base consciousness. That is below the floor, right? The basement is below the floor. The checkerboard means floor. So they are in the basement when they are wearing the symbolism that you see on their head.
It's great, great commentary there. So next we've got the Jack in the Box, which is obviously, you know, a clown. He's a clown. He's the fool, you know, about to step right off of a cliff. And he lives in a box. You just got to get him wound up, right? Mm. There's the mind control. That's what they're constantly doing to the clowns of the world, is winding them up, and then they come popping out. And obviously you see here, related to the restaurant, if you could even call it that, Jack in the Box, which if your diet looks like that, you're probably a Jack in the Box too.
Right. Yeah.
It's more occult mockery for sure.
Absolutely.
Like, come eat a Jack in the Box. All right. You know, you're a derelict of society, you know, the hobo that lives in a box. When you're naughty, they put you in a penalty box or a cube, you know, a cell, a jail cell is a box.
Right.
The Skinner box, if anyone's familiar with that, it's basically a device invented by B.F. Skinner, one of the kind of forefathers of mind control, behavioral scientists, came up with this box to kind of predict and then eventually control the behavior of mice, you know, by their food and shocking them and things like that. So just more mind control symbolism.
Yeah, people, you know, they'll see this and be like, oh yeah, that they can do that to a mouse, but they can't do that to people. You
know? right. Yeah. That's why they go through all the trouble to do it on the mice. You see,
right.
It's about the mice. Right.
Right. Yeah. It's got to find out how to control the mice. That's it. That's all it's about.
Cause they're building a mice army underground, you know, to take over the world. So one of my personal favorites, the block button. You know, yeah. You got to use this because this is pretty much your digital sage on social media.
Right. I've used that quite a few times.
Yeah. And I'm pretty lenient with it, actually. I try to really give people a chance and let them be exposed to certain ideas for a while. Maybe you can plant some seeds, but you know, sometimes you just got to have strong boundaries with people, and they don't take hints. They don't respect your boundaries, and you got to block their ass. So there you go. You've got the tube, right? The box or that comes out of a cable box, to watch the movie that was in the box office. And so you can watch it on your Black Mirror, you know, it is a square. The Black Mirror is a square, but the black part is also pertaining to Saturn, which we'll probably get into a little bit more later.
Yeah, the Black Mirror is very interesting because the whole show, the Black Mirror show, the allegories are sorcerer allegories because they're like Twilight Zone. I always looked at as it's a balanced allegory, but Black Mirror is an allegory that is written by sorcerers because you can tell it always leads you a certain way and then it makes you feel hopeless at the end. And that is to, you know, tell you there is a reality to this. That's why I really like those shows, but also it's to keep you in a box. You know, it's to keep you from having any hope of getting out of the box.
Yeah. So here's some religious symbolism. You have the Kaaba or Kaaba in Mecca, which is a, you know, is essentially the capital of Islamic religion of the globe. And this is where thousands and thousands of people gather around this giant black cube and worship and praise it or pray to it and move in a big circle around the box. Interesting symbolism there, a circle or going around the box.
Circumambulation.
Ooh.
Yeah.
That's a word.
yeah, where people do religious walk-arounds, like around a certain, you know, emblem or a symbol.
Yeah. And then the Sheol Rosh is in the Judaic faith. Certain priests will, rabbi, they put this on their head and they write little scrolls with scriptures on it. Just more black cube, you know, symbolism, which, you know, Saturn, Judaism is a Saturn cult, the, you know, out of Phoenicia, Cana. So that Saturn was the god of that region back in the day. The Phoenician Canaanite gods were Saturn worshipers.
Think about this. Kabbalah, right, is the Jewish tradition,
right?
You know, associated with the it's an esoteric tradition.
Kabbalah.
Yeah, Kabbalah. That's right, man. It's like it's all connected. And it's interesting, too, because they're using that word ka, and ka means, you know, spirit or soul. And we can get into that later. But, you know, it's just very interesting because you can see how, you know, they're using the nature of, you know, outside of the religions, they're using that within the, you know, tied into the religions. And, you know, so there's a lot that you can learn from these religions that actually has something valuable. Because think about this, in Islam, Kaaba, the cube is the great mother, you know, so they're, you know, think about this too. It's a feminine religion. Right.
They,
you know, the surrender. Right. You know, Islam means to surrender. Right. You know, Mecca means the mother city. Right. But the cube, it actually used to be a white cube a very long time ago, but then they changed it to black. But the point is to, you know, understand that there is something very spiritual about this symbolically, but the way that people act it out is through belief systems, something they don't even question. They're going through the motions, not even questioning these things at all. And, but when you understand it esoterically or, you know, through the occult, it's like, oh, wow, it's actually something really, you know, amazing. But, you know, you have to understand how to differentiate between the religious dogma versus, you know, the esoteric occult understandings or spiritual understandings.
Right. Yeah, it's the unconsciousness of it is what makes it a dark, it's a magical ritual for basically energy siphoning and things like that. Also, we were talking about the names and to take it back to the Phoenician Canaanite god was El. And the Jewish word for God is Elohim. And so that's why the, you know, the elders were the ones that could speak with God. They were the elites. And to get closer to God, you must be elevated, right? There's just a few little name drops for you, but there's some really good ones.
Yeah, the E names, the capital E names. Yeah,
yes, man. They're elected.
Right. That's the truth.
All right. So a fun little slide real quick, just to touch on, you know, the shape of the earth. There's a huge debate about this, you know, and to a very detrimental effect within the, you know, the realm of the community, for lack of a better word, of truthers and freedom oriented people. You know, the earth figure, the archetype, you know, is the mother earth, is father sky and mother earth. And so to make a flat earth is like the height of disrespect to that sacred essence, in my opinion. And I think that's very deliberately done. Oh, yeah. It's another form of the cremation of care or the destruction of the sacred feminine, essentially.
Absolutely. Flattening the roundness, you know, or the,
flatten the curve.
Right. Flatten the curve. Yeah.
The whole thing. Right. It's weird when you think about that. It's almost like it in that of itself was like an incantation or a spell. 2 weeks to flatten the curve. What curve are we flattening here? You know what I mean? Because it's hijacked. That whole thing was about hijacking care, right? It was a destructive act on a global scale. But even though it was the destruction of care, it was done through a dark care because it was this false virtue signaling thing. You know what I'm getting at here? I mean, it's kind of hard to articulate, but
what you said about
the kind of stuff they do.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, with flattening the curve can mean multiple things, but it's interesting that it was at kind of the pinnacle of the whole flat earth psyop. You know, it's just because it really put everybody into a certain category that I'm not going to get into, but to get people to seem crazy, right? And because you can use it, they have definitely used it very, very methodically, politically. You know, it's politically charged to put you, the crazy people, anybody who questions reality, into a certain political side. And that's what they did very well. And so many people bit onto it because they're not, you know, developed. They have not allowed themselves to develop that sacred feminine. So it's like, you know, they have, and I'm not trying to, there's so many things I want to say right now, but I'm biting my tongue because I mean, it's just, this whole thing has just been such a waste of time. And, but we do have to talk about it because unfortunately, you know, these, you know, when you think of the people who have bought into this flat earth thing, they are at least at some level questioning reality. And so, you know, I don't want to, you know, put them down for that, but it's just like, man, you got to be honest and go into this so much further to really understand that there is that you're still in the box and you're thinking dogmatically, you know, about how reality actually works. And it's just when you see how much this has been debunked, and you go through it, because, you know, I had to go through this whole process to really understand, you know, this PSYOP. I didn't really know what to think at first, but I went through it and I logically took in the information, processed it, made, you know, saw what made sense and what didn't make sense. And then I was able to learn very quickly. Yeah, this is definitely taking us off track. And it is definitely something that is flattening the brain, really. when you really understand what the earth really is in correspondence to the brain, something I talked about in my Earth Brain part two presentation.
Yeah. All right. So here we have the octagon and the tesseract, which are two depictions of the same shape, really, the hypercube. They're two different ways of depicting it depending on perspective that you use, but essentially it's a five dimensional cube, right? It's how they, so you can't draw that because it's like our brains can't even see that. There's no way to draw it. So they kind of have to depict it in these ways, but it's like a whole layer beyond just the cube. It's like the cube within the cube, but it's also constantly folding in on itself. So when you see it, if you can find an animated version, you can see it's like constantly folding in on itself. So it's like being trapped within a trap within a trap. It's like the ultimate symbol of just complete lockdown of your consciousness. Add anything to that?
Just pure ignorance that eats itself.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, you have all this ignorance, and then because you're ignoring your own ignorance, it completely creates a whole nother cube over your mind, and then it just keeps on going and going and going, and it essentially spirit is just nowhere to be found. It's just
right.
Living it purely in materialism and our complex.
Right. And so with those shapes here, you see there's the octagon of the UFC and the boxing ring in boxing, which is funny that they call it a ring, even though it's a square for boxing.
Right. Yeah.
And, you know, but the whole point of these sports here is for two opponents to get in the ring or the octagon and to knock each other's lights out, right? Knock each other's blocks off.
Square up.
Right, right. And block their punches.
Right.
And again, here's the eight-pointed octagon with the stop sign, which is a symbol literally telling you stop. There's that sort of what's the word I'm looking for? You know, it's blocking you. It's inhibiting you. It's telling you stop. And the police cap also has the same shape. So it's just another, you know, you got the checkerboard here and then the eight-pointed octagon on top.
Right. Which corresponds to that tesseract.
Yes. So, again, I'm sure, Nate, you'll have plenty to say on this one. But, you know, as I showed in the when I was describing all the things that the box could represent, it is death itself, the death of consciousness, which what better way to depict that through the allegory of Hiram Abiff, of the, you know, tradition of Freemasonry. And another name for a coffin is a box. You know, I'll put you in a box. That's what that means, which goes under the ground, as we've already discussed there. So,
yeah, it's a, you know, you look at it as a tomb, you know, look at it always when you think of a box, especially in esoteric Freemasonry. Obviously, you want to think of everything that you've been covering. That's one of the reasons I was so excited to get you on this show, was for Hiram Abiff, because you really have shown all the different aspects of this idea of this, you know, of this symbol. And, you know, when you look at the tracing boards that we see here, well, the one on the right isn't necessarily a tracing board, but it is in the sense that, you know, it is telling the story of the death of Hiram Abiff. But when you think of, you know, if you have seen the last show that I did, I talked about the zodiac from Atum, the Atum, being, you know, akin to, you know, the autumn is dealing with Libra, it's dealing with Scorpio, and it's dealing with Sagittarius, right, as the houses of autumn or Atum, right? And those three houses correspond to the three ruffians that you see there, that on the right, that murdered Hiram Abiff. And what this is the sun has died. Okay. The S-U-N, the sun. So it's symbolically.
Would that be the widow's son?
Yes. The widow's son. That's right. So the widow's son being Hiram Abiff is the sun going down through the houses that I just said, Libra, Scorpio, and Sagittarius. The sun is going through. Why? Because it's going in its waning cycle. The sun is going down to its lowest point, being the winter solstice. And so those three houses represent the what Hiram Abiff had to go through, as the sun had to go through to get down to his death, being the winter solstice, where he goes down, where the sun goes down to its lowest point in the southern hemisphere for, in the northern hemisphere. But it goes down in that time period in December 21st at its lowest point and stays for 3 days following that. And then, you know, the sun rises 1 degree north on the 25th. So the way that that information has been stored is through these archetypes, being, you know, somebody like Hiram Abiff. And there's a lot more to add to this, but just remember that Hiram Abiff coming out of his box represents the sun starting to rise again. Right. And so then, you know, in the spring equinox, to spring out of the box, that's, you know, Hiram Abiff, you know, comes out of the box during that time.
The spring equibox.
Equibox. Yeah. 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 To come out of that box where the sun is at the equator, right? Where the sun has come back up from the south and is going up towards the north, and it breaks that line of the equator, that is the symbolically rising up out of the tomb or the womb. So there's a lot that goes into that. And then also, as you see on the left with the sprig of acacia is the little plant right there. And it's an evergreen, and it's on the south part of the box. And so when the sun, so the sun sets in the west. I'm sorry, I said the south. I meant the west. So the spring of acacia is in the west, right? And the reason it is because the sun sets in the west. The sun goes down below the horizon, which is about going into the box, into the coffin,
the right? Underworld.
The underworld. That's right.
There's the basement, the underworld.
That's right. Exactly.
Nice.
And so, yeah. And so then the sprig of acacia is an evergreen. And an evergreen does what through the winter? It lives. It doesn't die. Like, you know, it doesn't, you know, obviously the trees don't actually die and the bushes don't. Some things die definitely through the winter. But it's about understanding, you know, when the fall, when there's fall of the leaves and the green starts to go away of everything else.
The autumn.
Right. Count on the sprig of acacia, the evergreen, to stay green. And what that represents is immortality of the soul. It's always going to be there. You know, it's about spirit. Spirit doesn't die. Right. And so it's about the sprig of acacia is the immortality of the spirit as everything else dies, just like the sun, as it goes down into the darkness, or it creates darkness. Then what happens is that sprig of acacia represents evergreen, forever green. The immortality of the soul lives on, just like the sun lives on, and it will, you know, obviously, hopefully be back to bring more light. So that's what these archetypes do. It's a very beautiful science. And, you know, there's so much that goes into it. So many people are so afraid of it because right away they see a casket and they think evil and death, and they see crossbones and they think, oh my God, this is, you know, Satanism. And it's like, people have no idea. They have no idea because, first of all, they don't even know what Satanism is, because it's all about its behavior. Okay, it has nothing to do with symbolism. But symbolism can help you understand morality, which helps you understand evil, you know, and that's the beauty. That is the beauty of this symbolism, because it helps you understand the zodiac. It helps you understand Earth. It helps you understand yourself, helps you understand consciousness. It helps you understand death of the material self, you know, having your second birth, which people are also afraid of with what that means. And it's a very beautiful, beautiful, sacred internal science of self.
Yes. Very well laid out, man.
Thank you for letting me, take the time to explain that, you know?
No, dude, I'm here for it, man. You're a wealth of information, man. I love learning from you as well.
So yeah, it's so cool to see someone who developed the ideas of all the correspondences of the box, and it all fits together. You know, it's a very you know, when you become conscious of it, you really start to appreciate it, and you start to see that it's not this evil thing that everybody wants to associate it with. And you know, just like this Green Reaper, you know, it's like people just, you know, associate death and Green Reaper as being evil, you know, but it's like there's so much more to it.
Yeah. Well, and this slide right here is a lot to do with Saturn again. These are kind of subdivisions of the archetypes of Saturn. So Saturn is depicted as the Grim Reaper. He's got the scythe, you know, because it's kind of like the harvest, you know, that's what you do in the autumn to reap what you've sowed, right?
Right.
Saturn is all about natural law, you know, reaping what you've sowed, karma, and hence the executioner and the judge as well. The black robes all represent Saturn, and Saturn is the judge. He's, you know, but that's the thing is Saturn, again, just like the cube and all the things that we're talking about, he kind of gets a bad rap and is seen as evil or malefic. Nothing could be further from the truth, actually. Saturn is the gravity that's kind of pulling on you, but it's there to make you strong. It's there to make you rise up and stand in your own faculties and to not be your own opposer as well. Because they say karma's a bitch, and I say karma's only a bitch if you are. So
right.
If you are making things hard on yourself, you have no one to blame but yourself. It's, you know, not Saturn's fault. It's not natural law's fault. It's just a mirror, you know, reflecting back to you. So these things are only negative if you have something that you should be concerned about, what you've brought upon yourself. Otherwise, you should see these forces as something that is a positive, because that's what's keeping balance and order in the universe. There would be chaos without these forces at play. So it's so misunderstood. And again, it's the Abrahamic mind virus. I know I really rail on that, but this is why, because it absolutely fucks up people's ability to perceive all of the parts of nature and the integral purpose that they have to play. Everything is has a purpose and is balancing out and serving a role in cosmic order and the spiritual experience as well, on that personal level. So I'm very, you know, strongly opinionated about this, because I hate to see that people misunderstand these things and they reject them or demonize them and vilify them without understanding like how bad things would be if these guys didn't exist and weren't doing their thing, you know. And if you live righteously and align yourself to truth and natural law, you don't have anything to worry about. And the challenges that come your way when you cultivate a warrior mindset, this is something I talk a lot about on my channel as well, is you're not a victim to circumstances. You're not like, oh, everything's happening to me, nothing ever goes my way, and blah, blah, blah. That's the victim mindset. The warrior mindset is like, I'm in control of my destiny. I'm forging my own experience. And the challenges that are inevitably going to come, regardless, no matter how much control I think I have and how perfectly I play everything, shit's still going to go wrong. And to that I say, fucking bring it. Because all that's going to bring for me is more strength and experience and leveling up. You know, with the greatest lessons come from challenge and even calamity.
Very well said. Yeah, man. Yeah, the challenge. Yeah, sharpening is all about taking on the challenge head on. And, you know, people fear what they don't understand. They fear what they don't know. And, you know, so they reside in the dark. So it's just, you know, but if people were to really be raised correctly, don't demonize things that you fear. Look into them, look deeper into them, and there you will find the truth. I really like the way that you broke all that down, because I mean, you know, think when you're talking about the Grim Reaper and you know, Saturn and Kronos, and you know, being this natural law, is, you know, this is all about understanding this hourglass too. You know, we only have a certain amount of what we call time here and now. You know, we only have a certain amount of time from the time that we're incarnated until the time that we are, you know, physically going back.
Recycled.
Yeah, recycled, right. We have a certain amount of time in this, you know, this form. And therefore, we only have so much time to figure out our own self, our mind. And people have, you know, this is something I talked about in the last show about time management, because it's about understanding that if we don't manage our time correctly, we only, I mean, this is what the Weeping Virgin goddess is about understanding that we only have this certain amount of time, and there's only the hope. The sacred feminine, the Weeping Virgin goddess, she also, one of the things she represents is she's weeping and hoping that the spirit will rise once more, you know, in this incarnation being one time at least. But I look at it as like you continuously, just like the sun goes around the earth, you know, from our perspective, it continuously having aligning our energy ourselves to the sun as rising with the sun, you know, because it's part of nature. And, you know, just like we, you know, just like animals and plants rise with the sun every day. Well, same thing with consciousness. And, you know, but we only have a certain amount of time to figure that out and actually align to that. And, you know, of course, there's so much mind control that we have to, you know, a lot of breaking out of the box that we have to go through to really rise up out of that. But, you know, the green, I like what you said about, you know, you reap what you sow. You know, I mean, it's just, it is, you know, what are you going to plant within yourself? Are you going to plant a whole bunch of garbage of, you know, allow a whole bunch of garbage to be planted in your mind and have that grown? Or are you going to defy that box program and break free of that and then plant lots of beautiful knowledge and experience of nature into yourself and then grow that as the real true hero of yourself, you know, without just living the program, you know?
Yeah.
Very, very beautiful knowledge.
I love it, man. We're really getting into the flow. I can feel it. We're getting fired up. All right. So, yeah, I really like this next slide as well, depicting the ballot box here. You know, this is a box. We just talked about the box as a depiction of death or the coffin. This is where your free will goes to die.
Yes. Completely agree. Well said. Yep.
Yeah.
Ding, so, ding.
Yeah. Nailed it. I mean, this is a big one because people are abdicating their personal power and sovereignty away and for these so-called representatives. I mean, just think about the terminology of that. You know, you're voting for someone to represent you as a human being. You're outsourcing your very humanity and self-governance to somebody you've never even met who are notorious for being the most lying scumbags on the planet and thinking like this is civilized society and this is how things have to be or else chaos would be, you know, all the crap that people say. But yeah, this is a really big one. And obviously, yeah, you put it in a box, a ballot box, because it's a poll, right? That's what a poll is it's just to ask your opinion, right? It doesn't mean you're controlling anything. It just means what are people thinking? You know, where's the consciousness at of the masses here?
Yeah, it makes for a good box to throw up in or shit in.
Yeah, right. Yep. Shit tickets.
Yeah, shit tickets. Yeah. I mean, it's like taking your soul, right? And, you know, if you could symbolically take your soul out, right, as a piece of paper, and then you light it on fire and throw it in the trash, that's exactly what you're doing when you're voting.
Yeah.
Only it comes with the violence that is imposed on other people's rights as a result. You know, people don't understand how that works because they don't take the time, they don't pay the attention to, you know, essentially get out of that box.
Yeah, think it through.
Right.
That's what this one it really comes down to for me. They don't think it through to the end of that logical progression of what they're actually endorsing and advocating for.
Yeah.
Like, what's the bottom line, you know, because it's all so nice and neat and pristine with, you know, legislators and their suits and, you know, their bills that they write out and, you know, pass into law. It doesn't look violent. It looks very prestigious and sophisticated and refined, but it's not. It's just organized crime.
Right. Yeah, the complete opposite, again, of spiritualism. It's just, you know, all of this. I mean, not all of this, but, you know, all the anything to do with, you know, authority, anything to do with the state, anything to do with government. It's all the opposite of true spiritualism. Mm.
So this next one here is dealing with the pyramid symbol, which you've already touched on a little bit. In order to build a pyramid, you have to have units that are uniform, and that way you can stack them and construct a monolith like I talked about earlier. That's what a pyramid is. It's a monolith. And so that's why they have to put your brain in the little press and clamp it down, and then, you know, and then it's a cube, and that way it's, it conforms to all the other cubes that are the same shape, and it stacks nice and neat. And this is why on the dollar bill, you've got the pyramid that is stacked up almost to the eye of consciousness. And if you look at the finished product of what their New World Order is, that's what it says right there, Novus Ordo Seclorum, New World Order, is that the cubes would be constructed until the pyramid is finished, and the peak would be obscuring the light of consciousness. That's exactly what they're doing. They're creating everyone into cubes so that their consciousness is blocked out, is squelched. So even in this right image here, you can see the peak isn't quite finished yet. So I thought that was a pretty fitting one here. And then the next one, I believe, yes, this is, you know, the wall in Pink Floyd's The Wall. All in all, you're just another brick in the wall. That's, we don't need no education, right? And that's what the kids are like being put into the meat grinder, because that's a big part of what, you know, schooling is that's where it starts, putting you in the box. That's huge. And then, of course, to graduate school, you put a square on your head called a mortar board, which is another Masonic depiction, you know, terminology there.
Yeah, very well said, man. I really like these slides. I was going to say, too, with the pyramid, you can look at it like a compartmentalization, you know,
yeah,
all the different forms, all the, you know, I mean, you said it too, it's everybody's in a cube next to each other, they don't know anything about each other, but the people who rule the top, you know, I look at the eye as having knowledge, you know, having that knowledge power differential over everybody else, and having that control over all those compartmentalized cubes.
Yes, that's very, very well said. As that's what, you know, the concept of a terrorist cell means.
Yes.
Well, you know, it's a cell like a jail cell. It's another cube. The terrorist cell concept means that everything is so compartmentalized that no one knows the big picture. They know just enough to do their job. And then if they got compromised, they don't even know it enough themselves to compromise the bigger picture, because they don't even know. They're just doing their little part, and they don't see the greater whole of what they're actually constructing.
Yeah, never questioning at all what they're part of.
Right, because of that paycheck still coming in. So
all
concludes the box symbolism portion. So, Nate, if you want to say anything before we move on to this animism section.
Yeah, so I... briefly, well, I just want to say also that, you know, the box symbolism is, I mean, it's just so important to the next part of this presentation, or the next part of the show, because animism is about how we're going to get out or, you know, grow out of this box of materialism. And I did touch on animism a little bit in show number 45, and it is, you know, as far as I know, animism is considered to be the root of all religion in the sense that, religion, it started somewhere, and then it becomes corrupted. And, animism really is at the heart, the central part of what religion really truly means. And I think that Logan has really done a fantastic job at explaining animism. And one of the things that I wanted to say that I touched on in that show number 45 is I talked about the attack on air and our lungs. And air is associated, or it's associated with breathing. And it's about understanding the attack on the spirit, because spirit means breath, right? And one of the things I talked about was how everything that has happened in the past, for a long time, way more than the last 5 years, but when it came to putting the mask on our face, when it came to burning or manipulating or burning down all these major monster forests of the whole earth, being the lungs of the earth, and just all the pollution and just there's so much mockery to it with I can't breathe while wearing a mask. This is all about killing and crushing the spirit. And so animism, I'm still learning about animism. I think it's a very beautiful subject to dive into, because it really does tie you back to nature in such a way that you really do start to see your connection even deeper. And so, Logan, I know you have a lot to say on this, and I'm really looking forward to getting into your slides. And I'm thankful that I got into your work to find out more about animism and how important it is. And, something else that you talk about is, being a pagan, and, you get into paganism too. And if you want to talk about that, maybe your slides talk about that. I'm not sure, but both of those are very vital to understanding the antithesis of man's authority. So if you want to go ahead and start the slides, let's get right into it.
Yeah, man. This is the topic. I mean, it's so important beyond what I could even stress here. And I think it's really the missing piece that even, to make a bold statement, most even natural law teachers, such as what, people in our community are missing. And it's almost putting the cart before the horse, because animism is the part that brings natural law understanding to the human level and really connects everything together. Otherwise, it's still this very disconnected, almost very like the Abrahamic approach of God is this thing and we're not it, and nature is separate. It's this very dissociative disorder projected outwardly kind of a thing. Animism is the thing that is the mindset that binds it all together, and just as a unified system. So what is animism? Let's get into that. It comes from anima, which is a Latin word, which means breath. Like you were just saying, it's another way of saying that, the spirit, to be inspirited or inspired, is to be imbued with this life force energy. So that's what the anima is life force energy. But is associated with breath as well. And so this is where the word animated comes from. So to be animated is to be imbued with life force energy. You've animated an inanimate object into something that has life. And this is where animals, you know, the animals are imbued with this same life force energy. So, animism is a mindset. It's not a religion. It is a way of looking at the world, at reality, the universe. It is a mindset or worldview that all is mind. So right in that, it is integrating the first hermetic principle, the first natural law, all is mind. So that's your base operating system. The entire universe is consciousness, and that all living beings, including animals, plants, and even inanimate objects, possess a spiritual essence or soul. Nature is seen as a web of interconnected spiritual forces, and each element of the natural world is considered to have its own consciousness or spirit. It underscores the idea that humans are just one part of the larger tapestry of existence and are interconnected with all living beings and elements of nature.
I love that.
So the is based upon the natural laws of spirituality, the universe, and our place in it. It is the functional operating mindset to integrate knowledge of natural law in a practical human capacity. So freedom of free will and expression. Free will expression and exploration without the threat of eternal torture and damnation. That's what religion gives you. Only self-imposed karma for not respecting the freedom of others. It is developing a direct living relationship. I love that. Living relationship with nature, the universe, reality itself, cosmic law, and your own personal magic. Your creative ability without any intermediary or doctrine, no longer seeing yourself as separate from nature and God. So I'll let you riff on that before I continue. I know that was quite a mouthful.
Oh, let me go back to that slide. Okay. You know that, yeah, I like what you said there, you know, developing a direct living relationship with nature. And that's a conscious relationship with nature, you know, to be able to see it, to be able to feel it, to be able to really be engulfed in it, you know, be truly connected, realize that you really are the universe. And It's a very beautiful thing because it's the way that we consciously tap into nature, and we give to nature. As my mom says, give to nature, nature will give to you. Mm-hmm. And this is all about having an animistic, perspective or understanding.
Giving and receiving. That right? That is the definition of a relationship. You're relating back and forth. You're, you know, giving and receiving the cosmic currency of information. Really, that's one thing I've been kind of just, it's a bit of a side note, but I think it's relevant, is just thinking of information is the language of the universe. And if you think of it that way, it's like everything is language. You know, absolutely. They're one and the same. We're just using words to exchange information. So our language is just one way of transmitting that information back and forth. But an action can just as much be a language through you're still sending information into the universe and getting it back too, because natural law, cause and effect. You take an action and then you get a direct outcome from that. So absolutely, that is a direct and living relationship with nature and reality. That's what it's all about. If you don't have that, how can you even call it spirituality? You're severed. You're disconnected. It's the law of correspondence is disembodied, dismembered. the inner and outer worlds are not able to interface with one another. That is like the most fundamental part of being a spiritual being.
Yeah, absolutely. The spiritual tool that most people do not even know about or completely, you know, dismiss it because it's just, it's too abstract for their mind. But it's like, you know, to have that understanding of, I mean, I'm not saying it's too abstract. It's just they're too lazy to, you know, really give it a try. You have to exercise your mind. You have to you can't just pick up a tool and know exactly what to do with it. You know, you can't just, if you didn't know what a shovel was, you wouldn't just go pick it up and know exactly what to do with it. You have to use it a little bit and get a feel for it. And then you start to understand it. Right. And that is exactly what all the hermetic principles are. They're spiritual tools of mind. And, you know, the way that I understand animism, that's what it's about. If you have hermeticism, then you understand, you know, and what I call the hermetically versatile mind is being able to have an understanding of all these tools and know how to use them in nature, you know, and know how to connect within nature. And it's it's such a beautiful thing. And so too many people don't understand it. Too many people flush it down the toilet, say, oh, that's just some new age, you know, mumbo jumbo, or it's, you know, religious types are like, you know, that's the devil's work.
Right.
It's just crazy how much people are missing out on these just absolute beautiful tools at hand, you know?
It is. And I mean, this is an occulted word. Can you name one time you've ever heard this word animism said on a TV show, a news report, anything in mainstream media whatsoever?
Yeah, definitely a sequestered word indeed. You know, very suppressed, very hidden, very it's here now, but it is definitely, I mean, it is the occult. I mean, it is absolutely the occult, because it is the, you know, unseen forces in nature. It is the spiritual laws. It's dealing with the spiritual laws. It's about being in alignment with them, you know?
Right. Yeah, that is, you said it, because when you said earlier, it's the kind of the source or root of all religions, I would say this is the source and root of all knowledge of any kind, let alone the deeper mysteries, and certainly the fundamental roots of all occultism, because it's the only way knowledge can even be acquired is through direct interface with reality, with nature. So that's what I'm saying, is like you can read a book and it can teach you things about reality. There, you know, the Kabbalion, for example, very useful book that's showing you something. And then once you see it, you can observe that and be like, oh, wow, that's why that book is so profound, because it's revealing something that you can see for yourself that you didn't see before. It was occulted, and then the veil was lifted, and then you from that point on have the ability to see, observe, and work with those dynamics directly, personally.
Right.
The Bible or any religious text that, it doesn't work that way. It's saying, oh, this is how reality works, and you know, you can't observe any of it, but just take it on faith that this is the truth, this is the afterlife, this is how it works, this is what you got to do to get into the good place, blah blah blah. That is anti spirituality through and through. So I mean, animism is, I just can't stress enough how vital it is for any sort of functionality in spirituality and search for truth and a true working relationship and understanding of the universe.
Yeah, I love what you said. Well, I mean, I really appreciate everything you just said, but also what you said, especially about animism being, you know, animals, right? Because animals are this like a direct reflection to us. They teach us things. That's why
totemism.
Yeah, totemism, right? They teach us the way that animals operate is how we understand consciousness. I mean, you know, like what you said with totemism, it's about the, you know, animals from the lowest to the highest. And that doesn't mean that one animal is better than the other. It just means that animals teach us from a very, you know, elementary stage of human evolution, how to look at animals and have their energy within us. So, you know, when we look at a totem pole and we see, you know, the you know, like the alligator at the bottom of the totem pole, and then you see some other mammals being like a bear or monkeys, and then you see the bird head at the top, you know, this is all about that true connection with animals. And that's what I understand animism to be, having that true connection to nature, in the sense of trying to understand the self and how yes. we can. And I look at that language as it is one of the most beautiful spiritual raised frequencies that a human being could ever take. Now, it's amazing what the world looks like now in the sense of technology, but technology does not equate to evolution. But what I see in the people who did understand those totem poles and were animistic truly with nature, I look at them as more evolved, because they knew how to operate in nature and with nature and not against nature, which is the world that we live in now, which is in opposition to nature through this material programming, aka this box that we're talking about.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So animism is the mindset, and then it's like the first two principles, hermetic principles, directly applied, because it's correspondence as well. That is so key to understanding the animistic mindset, is as within, so without, as above, so below. So you're seeing yourself in everything, every experience, every animal. There's parts of you. And this is why all of the arts of Gnosis came out of animism as well. Astrology, runes, tarot. It's the same thing. It's correspondence.
Right.
These things, each archetype, each card, each rune, each house and planet placement, whatever, correspond to a cosmic energy that is present in nature as well as within our own consciousness. And this is the key to understanding yourself and the universe all at the same time. And that's the beauty of it. The more you learn about the universe, the cosmos, the more you're learning about yourself, and vice versa. And experience is the thing that is the catalyst to all of that. So if you're not experiencing and you're living in a box and just believing everything on faith, you're completely cut off with the very essence of what it means to be human. I mean, it's just mind blowing, really, that like I went so long without understanding this, and now even just realizing the importance of this, it's the very pinnacle, in my opinion. And because everything else falls into place with that, natural law, morality, you know, esoteric, you know, knowledge, all of that. As much as I love those things, it's like it's not an and or thing. It's like when you grasp the animism and you integrate it, as you take it in as your mindset, everything else just clicks into place, because it's the framework of everything. Spirituality.
Right. Yeah, it's like the glue. it is the substance that just brings everything together. It's what I call, you know, the law of correspondence is also the spiritual mirror, you know, to see yourself everywhere, right? Exactly. Or see the self everywhere, or see yourself in everything and connected to it. You know, it's just, it's a very, very beautiful way of seeing, but also it's a very necessary way for evolution.
Yeah.
I completely, man, I love this topic. This is the one, dude. Yeah. I mean, when I say, I keep telling people the X symbol is the order of the day, and I definitely mean that, but also animism is the order of the day, you know, to raise yourself and see your, you know, your worth and your connection, and see that everything is alive, and to treat, you know, because it's about, you know, self-respect is also to respect, you know, outwardly and to respect all of nature.
That's empathy. Because you see that you, by harming another, you are harming yourself.
Right.
You know, it's like, that's animism, even if, whether you realize it or not.
Yeah.
That's what it is. And so, before we move to the next slide, because you mentioned a bit on paganism. And so I'm sure some people who are not familiar might be wondering, well, what's the difference? And I mean, it, of course, as like with most things, it just depends on who you ask. But my personal take is that animism is the mindset. Paganism is the practice. So I like to call paganism practical animism, because it's like animism is the mindset that is the common, it was the mindset of all pagan cultures. All just indigenous human beings, pre-Christian, more or less were animistic, and then paganism was their sort of like unique culture and religion that they developed out of that mindset of animism, based on a lot of different things, the region that they were in. What plants and animals did they have available to them? What, you know, what was their social culture like? What sort of unique values did they have as a people? And then what sort of mythology did they construct around those things to depict the morals and values that they held uniquely? But then when you're directly interfacing with nature, you're going to see, when you start studying different pagan traditions, that there's a lot of overlap and syncretism, where you're like, wow, this god over here sounds a lot like this god, and they have different names, and there's a couple of subtle differences, but their essence is the same. It's almost like it's a real thing that they, different people, just kind of had their own ways of interpretation of that, you know. So that's just something to keep in mind if and when you, as whoever may be listening, just decides that you want to dig deeper into this and explore it for yourself. That's the way that I look at that is animism is the default, pure default spiritual mindset of a human being, without the box, without the doctrine and the programming and the slave mind bullshit that's just piled onto us at birth, you know. And then through that, that's the beauty of it. That's why there's different forms of paganism, because it was the free and pure mindset that allowed for that individual creative expression and interpretation of the natural forces to develop into all these different, rich and beautiful, different, diverse, you know, traditions of paganism.
Yeah, when it comes to paganism, my whole life, obviously, you know, if you're raised in a Catholic family, especially, the demonization of paganism is unreal.
It is
to the point where even when you're getting out of religion, you still have this belief that paganism is just a just a cult of evil. And then when you realize that this is just heavily demonized for a reason, you know, to really, really suppress anybody who's connecting to nature spiritually through animism, you know, and this is just, you know, what I understand now is just, you start to really understand what we're up against, how powerful of a force this mind control is of the church. And it is very, very just layered and layered. And, you know, you can see, you can definitely see where the church infiltrated, you know, the teachings and the, you know, the way of paganism. You know, you can tell how they tried to make it into something of their own at some point. But also, it's just about understanding that it just keeps becoming more and more corrupt over time. It just keeps going more and more into materialism. But, you know, I think a lot of people have just, I really like the way you explain that. And a lot of people just have, still have that really poor, low resolution idea of what paganism is. Mm. And, I mean, you know, I'm not going to sit here and act like I know fully what it means, but I definitely know that it has a lot to do with, you know, being more grassroots and being more aligned in nature. And it definitely has, you can see the way that people, you know, did their rituals. You can't do those ancient rituals without being animistic, because it's all about understanding. It's nature rituals. It's nature. What's it called? You know, it's all about fertility. It's all about, you know, understanding the cosmos, understanding the planets and the stars and everything that you're connected with truly in nature. It's just obliterated by, especially what I keep referring to as the solar cult. And, yes. And it's all to, you know, build this materialism up and destroy, anything that has to do with nature. And it's very sad, but also here we are trying to revive these ideas and keep them alive and understanding that the spirit never dies.
That is it, brother. You said it. That is the thing that gets me so fired up, because just look at history and all of the horrible things that they've done to try to like quell this, and they couldn't do it. Not completely. They really devastated and really did a number on, you know, the indigenous like shamanic practices and paganistic cultures throughout the world, but they didn't fully succeed. And there's a big revival happening right now. I mean, explosive. Now, people have a lot of work to do because they're bringing their religious bullshit into they're trying, though. You can tell, I mean, that's very significant what's happening, that they're trying to look elsewhere. They're trying to say, we need to go back to move forward. We got, you know, like, we fucked up big time. We need to get back to the roots, back to nature. And, you know, it's going to be a process, because, again, the Abrahamic mind virus is so insidious and just deep, deep embedded in the consciousness. And I'm still trying to uproot stuff that I, you know, have held on to. And I've not been, you know, Christian in name for decades now. And, you know, it's still a process. So people that are newer to coming out of it and they're jumping right into paganism, it's like, there's a lot of deprogramming that needs to be done to truly get it, but it's a step in the right direction. So that makes me very happy, but I definitely agree that the Abrahamic mind virus is arguably one of the most devastating things that's ever happened to humanity in terms of our consciousness, our connection to nature, our spirituality. I mean, it just fucking obliterated the natural way of
evolution.
People were living and our spiritual evolution, especially. But as I've really dug deeply into mind control more than ever this past year, especially with that Trivium hacking presentation, I mean, and I've been studying this topic for many years, but as I really dived fully into that, one thing became so just unmistakably clear that really the bottom line to all mind control is simply to disconnect people from nature. It sounds oversimplistic to put it that way, but if you really think about it, it actually is very true almost universally, whether directly or indirectly. That is the one like common thread to all of it, is to put you in the box and give you a proxy. It's like the Matrix is an obvious example, but it's almost like, maybe this is a crude example, but it's like we as humans are built to have sex, right? We have these sexual organs, and there's nothing more natural and just raw and organic than penetration, right? For both people. And then it's like all the mind control is like giving you a fleshlight and sticking that on you and telling you, oh, this is the real thing. This is what it is. And then eventually you just start believing it and you forget what it's even like to connect with another human being. That's what it's like, but with nature.
Well said. I completely agree. And it's, as long as people don't understand that we're living in a solar cult, we will remain enslaved in this materialistic degradation that's taken place. And again, we have to stress, there's nothing wrong with the solar. There's nothing wrong with the sun. There's nothing
the
wrong.
The sun is evil.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
It's literally burning this cult mentality, this materialism into people's minds. And they have,
we've
no
just got
idea.
A sunburn. That's all. Right. We've got a sunburn, man.
Yeah.
Just need to put some aloe on it. And get in the shade a little bit, you know?
Right. We've burned our wings, you know, collectively.
Icarus.
Yeah, because there's spirit is what rises and flies, right? And so, or levitates, right? And so we've
That's
gone
good.
All the way up and we've burned our wings. Now we're just, you know, living on the ground only.
Grounded.
Grounded only. Yeah, we're grounded forever. We've been grounded for, you know, the last like 70,000 years.
Yeah. Our flight is grounded and we're on a multi-millennia layover.
Yeah. We have to rebuild our wings spiritually.
Yeah. This is awesome, man. I'm loving this. So every single thing in existence is literal as well as archetypal or symbolic, allegorical, and is a tool for developing consciousness from the magic to the mundane. This is the pagan perspective. So this is another absolutely vital aspect, just like we were just talking about. The sun is not evil. There's no good and evil in nature itself. It is all just, they're all just tools. Every aspect of nature is a tool for developing and evolving our consciousness. And that's the way we need to look at things. So Saturn is not evil. The sun is not evil, right? Certain actions are evil. And that is important to distinguish. That's simply using judgment about right and wrong and what is being objectively created through action. It's a little bit different. That's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about just, you know, like when it rains, just because you had plans, you know, the rain may be bad to you, but then some other farmer is, you know, ecstatic because his crops were dying and now his crops are getting rain. that's kind of an example of what I mean. In nature itself, there is no good and evil. And it's all here for us. That's important too. It's serving us in some way. It's giving you an experience. It may not be what you want, but it's what you need. And you can either have the victim mindset and think that it's evil or it's out to get me or whatever, or, you know, just like I was talking about, cultivating the warrior mindset. As that is part of the animist mindset, because you're not viewing it from that black and white. It's like, no matter what nature gives you, you are the fucking magician. You are the fucking alchemist. You must transmute that into something good, into something useful and positive. That's the power that you have. And you can't access that if you're in victim mindset and just like, no, everything's, you know, out to get us and whatever. So all pure occult knowledge is of pagan origins via direct interface with nature. So much of it has been corrupted by the Abrahamic mind virus, but all knowledge first came from direct observation of reality. This is how it works. And then that can be either viewed and discovered by you individually, or someone can impart that knowledge onto you. That's a beautiful thing, that ability that we have, is we have books and now YouTube and the internet and things like that, where all this knowledge can be passed down and someone's life's work can be condensed into a book that you can read in 10 hours and get all of that information. But guess what? Until you start applying it and testing it yourself, it's useless, because if you don't, and you just take their word for it, well, you just made a religion out of it. Doesn't matter if it's a book about sailing or whatever it may be, until you actually practice it and test it to test its veracity, then it is a religion. So this is exactly why animism is not a religion, because it's all of it comes directly from reality, which you can access at any time.
Yeah.
Faith is not required.
Yeah. It's not a mental construct.
Yeah. It's a science. That's right. What science is, you know, somebody can say, oh, well, we did this experiment and this was the result. Therefore, you know, this is now fact. And you're like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Well, now we got to do some more tests to see if we can recreate what you got, the results that you got. And that's what science is it's only scientific if it's reproducible. If you can take, you know, a environment and control the variables, that's what natural law is. It's just the variables setting the stage, and then who does what and what was the outcome. That's what it is. And that's why it's the only mindset of empowerment, because it's putting you at that level of cause and effect and actually testing things for yourself, deducing and judging the information for yourself, and not taking any of it on faith. So it is anti-religion. And as I say here at the bottom line, animism is the only truly scientific perspective. Animism is more scientific than scientism, because plenty of, like I said at the beginning, plenty of people that look to science for the answers to reality and the mysteries of the universe, they're just taking it at faith of what the scientists say or what they publish in a magazine or a peer-reviewed study or whatever. It's the exact same thing in practice as a religionist. Meanwhile, they're mocking religion and say, oh, make believe and oh, your faith and all this. And it's like they're doing the exact same thing. It's just a little bit different. They're sourcing their information somewhere else.
Yeah, just completely faith-based. Just no understanding that it's about doing your own homework, but also taking what, you know, these scientists say and, you know, combining that information to see what makes sense and what doesn't make sense. It's the whole trivium process. Mm. And you know, it's just so amazing how much people can't see their own hypocrisy. And you know, it's just an ongoing thing. It's just people are so locked up. You know, you have, I mean, the box is just unreal how real it is because it's like, you know, I've always envisioned a drawing that I wanted to do of everybody walking around with box heads and just having like just a whole bunch of, you know, nonsense in there, you know, Abrahamic religions and scientism and, you know, all the political crap and, you know, just everything that makes someone less of a human being. One day I'll get to that drawing, but you know, it's like, that's how I see it. That's how I see people with that type of behavior.
I love it. And, you know, do it as you see fit, but maybe as a suggestion, don't forget about the things that aren't so obvious as religions. You know, you got your cross, like one guy's got a cross and, you know, the donkey. So he's represented, but what about like the Chevy symbol? Because people will turn turn anything into a religion, even right. Just something as simple as like a brand of truck.
Yeah, absolutely.
You got two guys arguing, and one of them, the blockhead, is he's got a Ford symbol, and the other guy's got a Chevy, and they're like going at each other.
Yeah, Pepsi and Coke. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
All right, two more slides left. So this is a really awesome slide because you know, we've been using this word nature the whole time throughout this conversation. And well, where does that word come from? It comes from the Kemetian or ancient Egyptian civilization, who referred to the, well, I'll just read the slide here. In the ancient Egyptian or Kemetian cosmology and spirituality, the concept of NTR, pronounced Netcher or Netter, holds significant importance. Netcher is often translated as God or divine force, but its meaning in the context of ancient Egyptian thought goes beyond these simplistic translations. It represented multiplicity and unity. So there's the, you know, the all is the one and the one is the all. There's some correspondence and sort of the masculine and feminine that I talked about earlier, about, you know, the forest and the trees. Manifestations of cosmic principles, natural law, divine order and balance, the hierarchy of nature. So, you know, the nature to them were not just the natural laws, but also the cosmic forces. So this is what sort of mythology is based upon, right? It could be looked at as the gods and the spirit world and, you know, this sort of thing.
Elemental powers.
Yes. Yeah. Good word there. Interconnectedness with nature. It was transcendent and immanent and eternal and everlasting. So very in line with kind of what we teach about natural law, right? Immutable, timeless. And so the concept of nature in Kemetian spirituality encapsulated a profound understanding of the divine forces that shaped the world and human experience. It was not a matter of religious belief, but a comprehensive worldview that influenced all aspects of life, culture, and society in ancient Egypt. I mean, just imagine what it would be like to live in a civilization that everybody has this mindset that we're part of the whole and we respect nature and we respect, you know, the divine order of things. So yeah. Vastly different than what we have now.
Yeah. Knowing, understanding their role in nature, you know, that this is one thing I really like about understanding the nature, the NTR is, you know, the nature, the elemental power, which, you know, we eventually call God or gods, right? And or the Neteru, which means, you know, gods plural. And these are the elemental powers that help us understand the whole. So if you think of, you know, the divine circle, it is pure, right? It's infinite.
Complete.
And so, right, it's complete. That is absolutely right. And when that, as a human being, we have, you know, especially when in the stellar mythology and then into the lunar and then into the solar, before it got corrupted completely, is we understood as a people at some point that we're the people back then. I just say we, because, you know, we're human beings. We're all connected. At some point we had, we were raised because the societies back then were raised. They really understood these elemental powers as a way of understanding the whole circle, the divine, you know, the great architect of the universe, the infinite intelligence of the universe, natural law, nature, whatever you want to call it. They understood it, and they had these elemental powers as natures or archetypes that they had to help them understand nature. And that's why they were they all understood, you know, that's why they were all aligned, because they weren't, you know, they weren't material based. They were helping each other raise up because they understood the value of life. They understood that, I mean, you know, I'm not saying all the way through all the mythos, but I'm just saying that at one point, especially from what I understand with the stellar mythos, and this is something that a lot of people really hate to hear, but something that took place at least 300,000 years ago. But these people, the writing is on the wall. The writing is in the building of the architecture. They understood. They were master astronomers. If you're a master astronomer, you understand how nature works. You are an animist. You're somebody who is paying attention to how things actually work through gnosis, you know, taking in the information, you're processing the information, and now you're applying it. You're seeing it everywhere. You're seeing how, you know, this law, this, you know, natural law, how it really works through these archetypes. And it's a very beautiful, big picture. You know, something I'm really trying to explain a lot further in these shows recently. Something that can be, you know, that's why these archetypes like Osiris and Horus and Hiram Abiff and Isis and, you know, just Hiram Abiff, we have to understand, I didn't mean to throw him in the mix, but it's just, you know, these are the elemental powers, and then Hiram Abiff is a connection to those elemental powers to help us understand them from the modern day, you know. So we have our modern netchers, you know, I would associate Hiram Abiff as a netcher, but, you know, it's about understanding those ancient netchers and what they really meant as aspects of nature, powers in nature. And so that way we know how to work with those powers in nature, AKA being an animist, right?
Yeah. Very well said, man. Yeah, it really is. And it's something that, like, you could spend a lifetime just unfolding, you know, all of the implications of what this truly means. And that's a beautiful thing too, because it's like, you could look at it like, oh, well, I'll never fully understand it. Oh, that sounds like so much work. Or you could look at it like, I have a lifetime of discovery and improvement and deepening, you know, drinking from the well of knowledge. That sounds much better to me.
Yeah. Refinement is, I mean, it just makes the most sense instead of staying dull.
So if you see the universe and self as reflections of itself in the mind of God, not separate but one, interacting through a unified sacred system of nature, you are an animist. See how easy that is? You don't have to get baptized. You don't have to do some sort of initiation. It's just, if you have this mindset, then that's what you are. And it's really that simple. But like I said, you can, you know, make this realization and then spend a lifetime unfolding and unfurling what that truly means. And not just from a philosophical perspective, but from a practical human perspective in how you live your life, how you see the world, and how you operate in it.
Very well said. Yeah, that slide is such a great way to end this whole show, because I mean, it doesn't get any more simple than that. And of course, with that being said, truth, a lot of people say truth is simple, and I'd have to disagree with that. I'd have to say truth is not simple to understand. It takes a lot of work. You don't just automatically see things. It doesn't just automatically develop, you know, when you come in contact with this type of knowledge, right? And so it's not such a simple thing. It is a very hard path to truth. You know, truth is a hard path, especially if you've broken the box of mind control. It is very difficult.
You're bringing up an interesting thought for me here, because there's I want to add my own kind of personal take on this, because I do agree with what you're saying, but it's like, truth is truth. Truth is everything. So it's both infinitely complex and simple, because it's the one and it's the all,
right?
So I would say truth itself is both simple and complex.
Yeah.
However, when it comes to our understanding of truth, which becomes knowledge, right? We don't have truth. We have knowledge of truth. Truth is what is. Our knowledge is simply our mental ability to come to actually comprehend what that is, to see it and to truly understand it. And so truth can be simplified, but only through that very rigorous, difficult process that you were just talking about, Nate, of getting to that point. So it's like truth is, it's like it starts simple, then it gets complicated, and then it gets simple again. Because you have to start with like a morsel to point you in the right direction. And then you start pulling on that thread and seeing where it goes. And then you start, the more you pull, the more comes off in different directions. And you're just like, oh, for every question I answered, I have five more, you know, questions. And then you go and you go and you go. But then once you kind of hit that like inflection point, then you start collapsing it back in and of itself. And it's like that quote, I believe maybe Einstein said, if you can't explain something simply, you don't understand it well enough. So it's like, then you once you get to that point of truly seeing all the pieces and all of its complexity, then you can start condensing it back down. And like our brother Will says, to simplify the profound, you know.
For sure. Yeah, I agree with that. I think it's just maybe even the way that I explained it is it's more of, truth is not something that can be simply understood.
Yes.
Right. And I think that's probably a better way to say it, because like, you know, you're not going to see any little 8-year-old children talking the way we've been talking today. Right. To explain the truth, you know, of things. It's just
years.
it takes years to see it, to understand it, and to appreciate it, and to arrive at it. And, you know, but yeah, it's, you know, I agree. It's complex, but you know, the more that you, like, I don't know how I would explain, you know, I mean, I could explain to a child certain things, but you know, it's like, that's how I measure it. You know, it's like a child, what can a child understand? Because if a child can understand something so complex of truth that is simplified, can they really understand that truth? And I just think that that just comes with time. It comes with true development.
It's like yes and no. When someone like us is trying to explain something simply to a child, that's us doing what I just said, collapsing all this complexity that we know into something very, very simple. Now, is that simple going to contain all that complexity? No, but right. It can be simple yet still true, and sure. In a way that's deliverable to a simple mind such as a child. So it's like they can understand the simple version of it and it be true. What they're thinking of is true. It just doesn't have all the richness and the nuance that we have that comes with time. I think right. That's a really good way to look at that, actually, because I think that's how we should, you know, I'm not a parent, but that's how I want to approach teaching kids, my kids, is give them the simple morsel that does contain the essence of it, but in a very simplified way that doesn't confuse them and bog them down, and then they don't really understand it at all. Better to have a very simple yet true version than an overly complicated thing that actually pulls them away from grasping the essence of it.
Right. Yeah.
That's an interesting thing.
Oh yeah, no, it is. It's and it's, you know, I mean, there's a reason that symbols are simple, right? and therefore, you know, the more that we can you know, simplify things. I mean, that's why a symbol is a simple thing, as an emblem or as a shape.
Dude, that's such a perfect example. Because as you know, I've been diving deeply into the runes because I'm working on my rune course, and so that's such a perfect example because I could take a rune, and like, tell you a few words that describe it, and those would be correct, but still not containing the richness of what that rune truly embodies. So it's like I'm learning how rich and complex the runes can be, and absolutely falling in love with that, but still seeing that. And this is why I'm breaking down my course into the exoteric and the esoteric, because I want to be able to give those kind of more common interpretations that you hear like on a YouTube video or something that are not untrue. They just don't have that same richness that I've like harvested from like hours and hours of research. So that's a perfect depiction of that. A single symbol can contain so much, a wealth of knowledge.
Absolutely.
And yet, you could just give a few little words that sort of encapsulate that and still be like true to that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, that's the beauty of symbolism. You know, it is all about the complexity and the simplicity all at once. But that being said, we're approaching a very late hour, and we're going to go ahead and wind down. If there's anything left that you would like to say, please feel free to let people know any last words.
I think we really covered a lot here. So if you're still listening, you know, congratulations. This has been a pretty beefy episode, but I think really jam-packed with lots of information that's important for everybody to consider. I certainly learned a lot and got my wheels turning. So really grateful for the opportunity. I've really enjoyed this conversation. And anyone out there who resonates with me and some of the things that I talked about, then please feel free to come check out more of my work. You can go to thewizardfactory.com and find links to all my platforms. And primarily, I focus on my YouTube channel. So my longer form videos and presentations are there. And I cover a lot of different concepts, but definitely animism and natural law being the epicenter of everything. The all where all roads lead to Rome, essentially. But yeah, that's about it. You know, follow me on the social medias, Facebook and whatnot, and definitely subscribe to the YouTube channel. And yeah, let's connect.
Great, man. Thank you so much, Logan. I've been looking forward to this for a long time, ever since I saw your presentation. And, you know, this isn't something that I've done for a while. If anybody's been listening to the Cubbyhole, they know that I haven't interviewed anybody for a very long time. I've been really just putting all the work into, you know, the information and doing a lot of research. And, you know, anybody who goes and looks at or listens to anything by Logan and the Wizard Factory, you will definitely be in for a really great gold mine of information. And man, I mean, one thing that, as you could see in Logan's slides, his aesthetics are always spot on. They're always so good. And that's always been something else that has been inspiring, because, you know, having good slides with knowledge associated with the slides is what helps us really solidify these ideas. And it makes such a bigger impact. And I really, I love that. I think it's so inspiring. And, you know, it's something that very few people really do. And I think that it's a major tool. And, but anyway, on that note, thank you all for tuning in. And if you're interested for more shows, presentations, or news, please go to cubbyhole.com. And also, if you have any questions regarding the topics for these shows, please email me at cubbyhole@mail.com. And that's at mail.com, not Gmail. I'm just giving Logan a hard time. a lot of people think that. But please email me if you'd like to be on the list for any Cubbyhole news regarding new presentations, major events, or the newest podcast episodes. And on that note, I'm your host, Nate Kapp. Thank you for listening. And just remember, keep in mind, do no harm, defend truth, and keep transcending dogma. Break that box.